of his intention to retire from the House, effective from 4th February.
But now all focus shifts to Sir Keir Starmer. Why did he go ahead with the appointment of Mandelson as our ambassador? Why was there no face-to-face interview? What should happen to the Prime Minister? One person who's in little doubt, Kemi Badenoch, leader of the Conservatives.
We need to know what went on with the vetting. So what we're going to do is use a rare parliamentary mechanism to force the government to release all of the papers.
Plus a fantastic pledge from the government. NHS cancer plan expects to save 75% of sufferers. Claire Wright has incurable breast cancer 4 years ago.
I was put on the cancer ward, so alarm bells were ringing in my mind, and I was thinking, oh my God, you know, they think this is cancer. I didn't even know if I was going to make it out of hospital.
Health Secretary Wes Streeton joins us in the first hour. News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, it's understood the former Prince Andrew has moved from his home in Windsor to the Sandringham estate. Buckingham Palace said last October that he would be moving following pressure over his ties with Jeffrey Epstein. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight is following developments.
Andrew is understood to have made the move on Monday night out of the sprawling Royal Lodge where he stayed now for more than 20 years. But we are told we could still see him on the Windsor estate as he finishes packing up his life. A source has told the Sun newspaper that leaving Royal Lodge was so humiliating for Andrew that he chose to do it under the cover of darkness.
Thames Valley Police says it is assessing allegations that a second woman was sent to the UK by Jeffrey Epstein for a sexual encounter with Andrew in 2010. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has always denied any wrongdoing. The Conservatives are expected to try to force the release of all papers relating to Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to the US. The party's demanding answers around the vetting process over his friendship with the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Editor of Private Eye magazine Ian Hislop has told LBC it threatens to seriously undermine Sir Keir Starmer's leadership.
It seemed to be an incredible lack of judgment and also lack of political nous. There is no justification, knowing what he knew, for appointing him to be ambassador. And also, he does seem to have had a very important advisory role in the whole Starmer project. And that's embarrassing.
Police say they've opened a criminal investigation into claims that Peter Mandelson leaked sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein back in 2009. LBC has contacted Peter Mandelson, but he's previously denied any wrongdoing. The government plans for 75% of cancer patients to survive the disease by 2035. That's up from 60% at the moment. The promise features in the new National Cancer Plan for England, and the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, will be with Nick in the next hour. Rules on fostering could be relaxed in England as part of efforts to tackle a fall in the number of places for young people. New plans would ensure that single or unmarried people can foster, as well as renters and those in full-time work. And Arsenal have reached a first Wembley final in 6 years. They beat Chelsea 1-0 in the second leg of their League Cup semi-final, winning 4-2 on aggregate last night. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,314. It closed down 26 yesterday. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.16. LBC weather, cloudy for most with bright spells in southern areas after a foggy start. Rain confined to northern Scotland, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Jack and Jill went up the hill in their new convertible roadster. The handling was good and under the hood was a hybrid electric motor. Their new set of wheels came with a great deal thanks to their experience score. They got a better rate because their score was in shape. Now their walking days are no more. Better your Experian credit score to help unlock better rates on car finance. Experian. Better your score. Better your story.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after seven on Wednesday, February the 4th. I'm out of here, part one. Lord Mandelson says he will leave the House of Lords. He retains currently, though, still the right to call himself a Lord. And this is the first time action of this sort has been taken since 1917. And that's for people who were fighting with the Germans in World War I. I'm out of here, part two. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor at what's called so-called a midnight flit from Royal Lodge into a sort of holding home for a while before he goes to the new premises. We'll give full details on that as yet more scandal emerges from the Epstein files. In other news, tragedy from the skies.
Two men have died after a light aircraft crashed on the moors in Greater Manchester. I'm LBC's Chris Chambers with the details.
The pledge that could promise so much. NHS cancer plans expect to save 75% of sufferers. If you've had it, if you've been diagnosed, if you're getting better now, how do you react? Health Secretary Wes Streeting, much to discuss with him, by the way, but he's here to talk about that at first, at least, later in this hour. In other health matters, Met police officers took more than 133,000 sick days due to mental or emotional health issues. Ben Pearson was a police officer, medically discharged after suffering with PTSD. He spoke last year.
Something inside snapped, and it were at that point I thought, something's not right, and I'm going down a slippery slope into what I'd describe as the abyss.
Plus, to the US, is the First Lady box office?
If you want to watch nearly 2 hours of B-roll of the First Lady, it's the perfect time to go to the cinema. I'm LBC's Helen Hoddenott reporting from Melania, the movie.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I've been covering the political beat with some degree of intensity for a quarter of a century. I was also a student of history as well at school. I cannot think of any politician, living or dead, anywhere on the planet, whose life has been so punctuated by victory, scandal, comeback, and then fresh scandal. It's extraordinary. Whatever you think of Lord Mandelson, the role he played in putting New Labour together is without doubt a supremely skilled politician, but just where his skill set there is undeniable, his ability to actually judge people would seem to be about as low as it can get. He seems to have a mild obsession with rich people. Remember, this is the man who once said he was intensely relaxed about very rich people, as long as they paid their taxes. But enough of him for now, because focus undoubtedly shifts to the former director of public prosecutions, a supposedly forensically skilled Sir Keir Starmer, appointing this man to be our man in Washington without interview, civil servants admitting they had no interview, and the supposed vetting system, which is meant to be the envy of the world in Whitehall, failing catastrophically, pushed forward by his chief of staff, Morgan McSweeney. Oh, how we've moved on from July 2024, when Sir Keir Starmer made this victory speech on the steps of Downing Street, promising to restore trust in politics.
We have to return politics to public service. Show that politics can be a force for good. Make no mistake, that is the great test of politics in this era. The fight for trust is the battle that defines our age.
The fight for trust? I'll be asking you where. Sadly now, all politicians, because very regrettably, understandably but regrettably, they all get tarred with the same brush, if we're allowed to use that expression, which in many instances is unfortunate, but you can kind of understand it. So what of his promise for trust? Let's quickly look at the events yesterday, chronologically. Yesterday afternoon, Lord Mandelson announced his retirement from the Lords following increasing pressure from within his own party. And also, there's a whiff of which has now been confirmed, a police investigation. The announcement was made by the Speaker, Lord Forsyth.
My Lords, given the public interest and for the convenience of the House, I've decided to inform the House that the Clerk of the Parliaments has today received notification from Lord Mandelson of his intention to retire from the House, effective from 4th February. I will formally notify this to the House tomorrow in the usual way.
And the whiff became a reality. A criminal investigation was launched by the Metropolitan Police into these allegations. He leaked sensitive Downing Street emails and market information to Epstein. Responding to the news yesterday, senior Labour MP John McDonnell said the scandal could mean the end of Sir Keir Starmer as PM.
This could bring this government down. It could certainly bring Keir Starmer down and this whole team around him. That's the seriousness of it. And one of the key elements of how we've got here is, and Mandelson was part of this, and New Labour, the whole team, was the closure of democracy within the party itself at every level.
So what happens next? Well, the PM could be forced to publish details of exactly what he knew about Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein when he appointed him as US ambassador, as the Conservatives will seek to force a Commons vote this afternoon. Speaking last night, party leader Kemi Badenoch explained what she hopes will take place today.
We need to know what went on with the vetting. So what we're going to do is use a rare parliamentary mechanism called a humble address, which is to force the government to release all of the papers that explain how this vetting, or non-vetting as we believe, took place. What I believe is that the normal procedures were waived away so that the Prime Minister could appoint a man who had such a close association with a convicted paedophile, well known, and he still went ahead and did this. What vetting was done? Let's see all of the correspondence, emails, mobile phone records. We want to see everything.
We'll give you a little bit more on the process that could bring that about later, but let's start talking about the lack of trust and bring into the conversation long-standing Labour politician, served as minister under Sir Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, Bill Rammell, who joins me now. Mr. Rammell, 9 months ago, Lord Mandelson was standing alongside President Trump in the White House with a fairly tasty-looking trade deal under his belt. Where is he standing now? What's his political standing in your view? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. He's standing in utter humiliation and condemnation. I get the potential attractions of appointing Peter as ambassador to Washington. He's got decades of international experience. He's a very good communicator. And he's got a track record of reaching across political divides. And in his early work as ambassador, he clearly had impact with the Trump administration. But he was utterly flawed. He's been sacked twice previously from the cabinet. He's got flawed judgment. He's got a propensity to really relish association with rich, powerful and wealthy people. And his conduct in respect of Epstein is shocking and appalling. You know, lobbying, advocating the guy when he'd been prosecuted and convicted for soliciting sex with a minor, and the latest revelations that he was actually leaking sensitive inside government information to Epstein for what you can only presume was an attempt at currying future personal gain is deeply, deeply shocking. And I think the government needs to react very strongly. He's already been stripped of Labour Party membership, even though he's voluntarily resigned from the Lords. The government is right to strip him of the vestiges of the peerage. But there then needs to be full transparency about what went on with the appointment of Mandelson as ambassador to Washington, and moving forward a much more vigorous and transparent process of vetting for people who are appointed to the House of Lords under Labour auspices, but also to ambassadorial positions. And all the communications need to be made public.
What does it say about Sir Keir Starmer's decision-making, Mr. Rammell?
Well, I think Keir Starmer showed poor judgment in appointing Mandelson as ambassador to Washington, but he's not the first prime minister who's responded to Peter's incredible networking and lobbying. You know, Tony Blair brought him back as a cabinet minister after he'd first been sacked for misconduct. Gordon Brown brought him back after he'd been sacked twice. Tory prime ministers were prone to taking his advice and influence when he was running Global Council. You know, but it was poor judgment. And I think Keir needs to go more fully on the record and talk clearly about why and how Mandelson was appointed and what processes were put in place to ensure that there was no baggage in the background when clearly there was.
Lastly, reminding my listeners, you served as Minister for Foreign and Commonwealth Affairs, so you are familiar with the Foreign Office. When it is reported that there was no face-to-face interview with Lord Mandelson, and it appears that other interviews and background checks were not done, how do you react to that?
I'm surprised and disappointed that that didn't take place. And when I say that there needs to be a fully-fledged review of the vetting process, both for appointments to the House of Lords, but also for ambassadorial positions. I think that really needs to happen because, you know, hindsight's the greatest tool, but I think with detailed probing and scrutiny and direct interrogation of Peter Mandelson, I think the Foreign Office would have been much better placed to advise the Prime Minister that his appointment wasn't appropriate.
Enjoyed our conversation today. Thanks for your time, Bill. Bill Ramwell served as Labour Minister under Sir Tony Blair, and Gordon Brown was a long-serving Labour MP, 14 after 7. Listening, Andy Preston. Now, Mr. Preston is both a businessman and a senior politician. He served as the independent mayor of Middlesbrough, but he's now a donor to the Conservative Party, having previously supported Labour. Which leads me neatly into the first question. Mr. Preston, you might have heard the clip, as it's called, about how the Prime Minister promised to rebuild trust in politics. Where does that trust stand now, this morning? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick, and everyone else. It stands on the floor. It's on the floor. It's Nick, this couldn't be worse. And this whole thing is far worse than anybody is actually admitting or realising right now. People are saying that this might be as big or bigger than Partygate. It might even equal the Profumo scandal. This is infinitely bigger. This involves international sex trafficking. It involves insider trading. It involves euro bailouts to the scale of €1 trillion and information. And I'm hearing people talk about Keir Starmer and his judgment being lacking. It's not poor judgment. It's stupidity to appoint a man who has made a career of being slimy around rich and powerful people in order to make himself rich and powerful. And the last thing I'll say, I'm aware I'm monologuing, so forgive me, but the last thing I'll say before you can ask another question is, Jeffrey Epstein was clearly an arch manipulator. He became very wealthy and he made money by supplying information and living off the backs of others. Well, guess what? Peter Mandelson, who claims to be his victim, that's exactly what he is. It's exactly the career he's built.
Kemi Badenoch and the Conservatives have got the whiff of blood in their nostrils. What do you see happening next?
Morgan McSweeney has to go very, very quickly. He's been central to all of this, and Keir Starmer may get rid of him quickly to try and let some blow, to try and show that he's decisive. Of course, he hasn't been decisive. He's kicked this down the road. This, I think, will bring Starmer down almost certainly, but could even bring a government down. Nick, this involves the royal family. Andrew Lawney, the writer, if you read his book, or I had the pleasure of meeting with him, the cover-ups that have gone on in government by Buckingham Palace over the years about Andrew's activities, secret services, British secret services going to government saying, this is happening, it's a risk to our country, and the cover-ups that have gone on, this is now part of the Epstein thing, it's part of the international sex trafficking story, and Peter Mandelson was involved in supplying. I was a trader on the financial markets for years, I ran hedge funds. I am certain that everything I am reading about what's happened constitutes serious, serious insider trading, for which there can be a 10-year prison sentence. This is monstrous, and it could bring the government down.
Fascinating talking to you. I wish I had more time. Andy, good luck. We'll talk again soon. Thank you. Andy Preston, businessman, served as independent mayor of Middlesbrough as recently as 2023, now donor of the Conservative Party. We're a little bit late, but it's obvious. I want to know about your level of trust. If, as Mr. Preston is saying, it's on the floor, is there any left? It's 7:17, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
It's understood Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has moved from his home in Windsor to the Sandringham estate. The Conservatives are expected to try and force the release of documents related to the appointment of Lord Mandelson as US ambassador. And the government is promising that 75% of cancer patients in England will survive by 2035. LBC weather, cloudy for most with bright spells in southern areas after a foggy start, rain confined to the north of Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M11 remains closed southbound between Junction 7 at Harlow and the M25 junction. It's because a car overturned in the early hours of this morning and the investigation works are taking place and there are lengthy delays on the approach, but also surrounding routes are now becoming extremely congested, especially the A414. Also delays on the A1M southbound heading down towards Junction 8 at Stevenage. A car's broken down, so the road is partially blocked. The M3 is very slow northbound to Junction 3 at Lighterwater, where a car's broken down. And in Charles Hill, there are delays on the A41 Hendon Way southbound because a van's broken down, so one lane is closed.
LBC.
Look at the future is unpredictable at times, but the Open University are the experts in online learning, allowing you to fit study around your life. What's more, you'll have support from dedicated tutors every step of the way. Now, suddenly your possibilities are open. Search the Open University to find out more. The Open University. The future is open.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Rebuilding trust in politics, a new cleaner politics. So much for those promises from Sir Keir Starmer. Where does it leave the Prime Minister? The Mandelson saga. Alex, you'll be the first of the callers already coming in. Quickly telling you, no surprises. I won't read all of the front pages to you because you can obviously, you're smart enough to know what they'll say. The Daily Mail, evidence that damns Labour's dark lord, very much focusing on Lord Mandelson. Metro, simply, oh Lord, and a picture of Mandelson with Sir Keir Starmer. And the I, police investigate Mandelson after number 10 hands over Epstein dossier. The Daily Telegraph has a new aspect of it, which we will air with Wes Streeting. This is the former Prime Minister Gordon Brown suggesting there's been a cover-up at number 10. His anger is particularly directed at someone who he believes, who he says, this is the Cabinet Secretary, Sir Chris Warmold, who he said he contacted, he, Gordon Brown, contacted him, Sir Chris, last year, as far back away as last September, suggesting he launched his own investigation concerning Lord Mandelson, and he claims, he, Brown, claims that he, Sir Chris, did not do that. So that's causing yet more ripples. Another extraordinary allegation that's come to mind. Bear in mind, there are some 3 million files. So if you're thinking, why is this going on? And I understand that you think, well, what's going on? I hate to use the word literally, because it's literally overused, but literally journalists are coming across these as they're ploughing through. One of which is in the Telegraph, is the allegation that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and Jeffrey Epstein enjoyed a threesome with one of his women, one of Epstein's women. Denial, of course, I need to tell you, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor denies any wrongdoing. The latest is, excuse me, is on the LBC app as well. Police assess allegation Epstein sent women to Windsor for sex with Andrew in 2010. That was a line that actually emerged on Monday, but more active now with that police investigation. Right, Alex in Lewisham, where's your level of trust with our politicians at the moment? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. I just want to say as well, regarding the number of files that have come out, there's still an estimated 10 million pages still to be released unredacted. So that's just where
this
we are.
This will take me to retirement, then, I would think.
And why do you think that they're being hidden? I'll leave you and your callers to guess on that one. But what I wanted to say is your excellent introduction reminded me of just how similar Mandelson is to Donald Trump. They're both politically astute. They're both obsessed with wealth and personal gain.
Yeah.
They were both best mates with Jeffrey Epstein.
Well, Trump would say he's not, but do go on, sir.
And they've both had a lifetime of scandal. So I just found that really interesting that you're, like I said, I think...
Very good parallel. All I would say is Trump is an extraordinarily wealthy man in and of his own right. Lord Mandelson
gave him half a billion when he was
Lord Mandelson, I mean, he's going to have a nice lifestyle, but he's nothing like the same. But I get that it's the allure of people with money, isn't it?
Absolutely. And moving on to Keir Starmer, I don't think it's entirely Starmer's fault. It was a high risk strategy to put Mandelson in there as the sort of Trump whisperer. They both know Epstein and have known Epstein, should I say. So I understand why he put him in place. But I think the reality of it is Mandelson lied to him. You know, it's now evident to us that Mandelson lied to him. But
where was the face-to-face interview with either him or his cabinet secretary or somebody of that level?
Oh, sure. And I'm sure that's a civil service issue, and I'm sure that the civil service will take the blame for that. But what I'm more concerned about is where were the security services in all of this? You know, they would have obviously known all of this stuff.
But my belief there, just lastly, Alex, is I believe a dossier will have been fed into the Cabinet Office, probably as far as Morgan McSweeney, and it's either ignored, sat on, redacted, edited, subbed, or whatever. That's what I sense could be the case.
Yeah, and if that is the case and that does come out, then they're both toast.
Alex, thanks for that. Bert, you've got a fascinating list that you want to share with us, Trust in Politics, but we'll do that after my next conversation, because when I went through the front pages, I deliberately held one back because it's the Sun, and I can speak to the author of the journal, one of the two journalists who put the piece together. Their front page is Princes of Darkness, obviously referring, as I said, to the Prince of Darkness, who now facing his political lights going out in oblivion. But the other prince, well, he really was a prince once, but he did a moonlight flit. It's the Splash, front page of the Sun. Matt Wilkinson is the paper's royal editor, joins me now. All right, before the readers, listeners run out and become your readers, what's the story, Matt? Morning.
Morning, yes. Well, the siege of Royal Lodge is over. Earlier this week, as you say, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has finally moved out of this Windsor home that has become so controversial. He left Monday evening at cover of darkness, and he's into to begin his exile or retirement, whichever way you want to phrase it. And he's staying at a Wood Farm Cottage on the Sandringham estate. Now, this is a temporary house before he moves next door to a more permanent home, Marsh Farm. It was agreed back in October, if you remember, when the King stripped him of all his titles, he said that he would move to Sandringham. But there was no time limit put on it, apart from, we understand, Marsh Farm, this new property, will be ready in April. So it's kind of interesting that it's happened all of a sudden this week, in the cover of darkness, on Monday night, while all these headlines were swirling around. You can only imagine what was going on in the King's mind. He's wanted him out for a long time, and he has won. He's finally got him out of Royal Lodge.
You mentioned the King One brother. Let's just play the listeners what another brother was saying yesterday. Appearing at the World Government Summit in Dubai, the Duke of Edinburgh, or Prince Edward, was asked by a journalist from CNN, Eleni Yuokos, about the revelations against his brother.
This is an important question to ask, and I want to ask it in the context of what we've seen from their majesties and their response, and they're saying that we should be focused specifically on the experience of the victims. The palace has been very, very clear on that. We've just heard some commentary from Prime Minister Keir Starmer as well, and bearing that in mind, and he's saying that there needs to be assistance for the victims. And I wonder what you think of this. Because it is so close to home, clearly very difficult, and I know you've put in various plans in place to move the institution forward, but how are you coping with that?
Well, with the best will in the world, I'm not sure this is the audience that is probably the least bit interested in that. So they all came here to listen to about education solving the future. I think it's all really important always to remember the victims. And who are the victims in all this?
Absolutely.
A lot of victims in this.
No, I know, and it's very difficult, and I completely understand. But super important for us to ask this because of all the work that you do and the effort you put into everything, so we appreciate that.
Matt, to me, that was a fairly well-schooled and skilled response by the Duke of Edinburgh. Where do you stand on that?
Oh, 100%. Well, quite right. I mean, what else does a right-thinking man say apart from, let's start, you know, the concerns...
Let's get him to a court in Washington, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's... this is something that's been echoed recently by the King and Queen. As I say, I keep referring back to their October statement where they kicked Andrew out and stripped him of his titles. The King and Queen was made quite clear that their thoughts are with the victims. I find it interesting that Edward was put on a spot there, and, you know, he doesn't speak on controversial issues, but he was able to say what everybody else is thinking. Let's think about the victims. It's also interesting that the situation with this police investigation, if you ever, if it, the potentially Thames Valley Police and also the US Congress whether Andrew would actually testify. Now, if you speak to the palace like I did quite regularly about their view on things like this, they say, well, if Andrew was to, you know, speak to the US Congress, it's up to him and it's up to his conscience. And I think maybe we've seen the last couple of years and months in his Newsnight interviews and his relationship with Epstein that we are now relying on Andrew's conscience, whether he wants to support the victims and help the victims of what's been going on. But it appears that Edward, the King and the Queen think that supporting the victims is the right thing to do.
Matt Wilkinson is Royal Editor of The Sun. He, with a colleague, who shares the front page of those stories, not just about Mendelssohn, but the former prince, Princes of Darkness, is the splash, is the headline, now on his moonlight flit. All right, Bert, I do hope you can hold. You've got a marvellous list to share with us about trust, but I do need to get you the other side of the news, and I hope you can make it. Also coming up, the other side of news in the world of business. Disney, everything from those networks such as ESPN through the Disney networks through the parks as well, has a new boss. But what do we know of them? You'll find out after this. It's 7:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news with Dominic Ellis.
Andrew Mountbatten Windsor is understood to have moved from his Windsor mansion to the Sandringham estate. The relocation was announced by Buckingham Palace in October following pressure over his ties with Jeffrey Epstein. The Metropolitan Police has confirmed it started a criminal investigation into Peter Mandelson. He's facing allegations that he passed market-sensitive information to Epstein when he was business secretary under Gordon Brown. And ministers are promising to increase the number of people who survive cancer in England. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, will outline the new strategy with Nick here on LBC in the next half hour. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with bright spells in southern areas after a foggy start. Rain confined to the north of Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
There is obviously going to be a question about the Prime Minister's judgment about why he was willing to not engage with finding out the deep links between Mandelson and Epstein before he appointed him as our top man in Washington. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe it's the fact that Mandelson had these connections with Epstein that meant Mandelson was appointed as the ambassador to the United States. Which would you like to think is worse?
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard this Air France message. Looking to start your journey with a taste of France? Enjoy in-flight French elegance as Paris, the City of Light, greets you on your way to the world's most remarkable destinations. Starting March the 29th, enjoy twice daily flights from London Gatwick, connecting via Paris to Asia, Africa and North America. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
It's another day at Screwfix, and Sir Mo Farah is still getting to grips with things.
So, Mo, with Sprint Delivery, we get the order to them in as little as 20 minutes. Mo?
Mo? Done. He was on the 18th floor.
Nice work. But, you know we use delivery riders, right?
Oh, now you tell me.
Sprint it in as little as 20 minutes. Screwfix. No stopping you. Conditions and geographical restrictions apply.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You always come out, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Yeah, I'm one of their biggest fans. I've got all the vinyl. First saw them at a tiny little place in Camden. Then as festival headliners a few years back. Oh, now that was special. So there's no chance I'd miss their world tour. In London, Lisbon and LA. Good thing I've been saving.
From down the road to across the globe. Saving gets you there. Join the millions of people already saving with NSNI. Visit NSNI.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Great. Bert has helped. We're coming to you. Jason and many other callers trust in politics? Where does it stand now? 7:34. Let's get into the world of business, though. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, joins me now. Christian, if I were writing a headline for the Disney Corporation, why might I put in "The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow"? Good morning.
Well, that's very good, Nick. I'll give you full credit for that one. Christian. Yes, now, look, we spend so much time talking about gloomy news. Let's just disappear for a moment to the land where dreams do come true, or they do indeed for Josh D'Amaro. Walt Disney has ended its long-running succession drama by appointing the person who runs their entertainment and theme parks, Josh D'Amaro, as its next top dog, chief executive. And the group actually is beginning to see some tentative signs of growth in its streaming business, which will be a huge part of the group's future. So D'Amaro is chairman of Disney Experiences. He will take over from Bob Iger in the middle of March. Iger led Disney for most of the last 20 years, and he will remain in place as a senior advisor and a board member. Here in the UK, Disney Plus streaming service is actually beginning to close the gap with Netflix, albeit marginally, but they are moving in the right direction. Although overall profits are remaining under pressure at the group when it comes to the streaming service, because it is such a competitive field, but it will be a huge area of focus for new Disney top dog, or top mouse, should I say, Josh D'Amaro.
Nicely done. I think that's 1-1. Well done. Right, there's a legal tool that's hitting European data stocks. I literally don't understand a word. I'm just reading aloud. What does this story mean?
Well, you've just given the game away there, Nick. Welcome to my world, too. There has been an AI-powered torpedo shot into markets around the world yesterday afternoon. Anthropic, which is the $300 billion AI company, a bit like OpenAI. It has Claude as its chatbot instead of ChatGPT. And it launched yesterday a new legal services tool, which is a productivity tool designed to automate tasks in the legal sector like contract reviewing, non-disclosure agreements, compliance checks, straightforward legal responses, etc. And it has caused an absolute carnage in a huge number of some of the biggest data companies in the world. Companies like RELX, listed on the London Stock Exchange, the London Stock Exchange Group itself, Experian, Pearson, all sorts of big companies who handle huge amounts of data and sell and package that data and access and tools around it to, among others, the legal services sector. Investors have taken the view that it might now be the case that those sorts of companies who had been thought to be quite well placed to survive the AI wave because of the amount of data they themselves own could simply now be replaced by these cheap, mass market available and extremely clever AI tools. If you just look at some of the share price movements yesterday afternoon before market close, RELX was down 16%, Experian down 9%, Pearson 8%, Informa, Sage, and London Stock Exchange Group itself all down. And it was a similar picture across Europe. Billions and billions of pounds wiped off those market values as people begin to think, hang on a minute, that now might very quickly become a legacy industry replaced by this exceptionally clever AI tool.
Which supermarket has been knocked off the top spot as being the most cost-effective, and by which rival?
Well, Asda has lost its title as Britain's cheapest supermarket. If you take a number of things into account, Tesco has moved into first place, according to consumer research. A basket of 230 items at Tesco with a club card will cost you £588. And that is just a smidge under Asda's total for the same at £590. This is the first time that Asda has been knocked off that top spot since a couple of years ago. And that does kick in with a Tesco club card, by the way. Sainsbury's was about £600 for the same. Morrison, £612. Waitrose, as you might imagine, came in just under
1,927.
Well, not quite.
We still
so
can't
punchy.
Keep our respective wives out of there, I imagine. I certainly know that's the case with me. So Aldi and Lidl don't get to play in this particular league, is that right?
They don't, because the analysis says that they just don't have the same range of products. So although they obviously lead the way when it comes to discounting and value, they would say they don't compare in quite the same analysis here, because they're looking at a particular range of products which those discounters don't always have.
Lastly,
but it is such a competitive field.
Sorry, Christian. Lastly, let's come to the job market. Hugely competitive there, and problems for graduates. There's a story running on City AM Online. Details on that.
Yeah, the National Institute for Social and Economic Research, Britain's oldest economics think tank, has put out a major piece of work today, mostly focusing on growth forecasts for the year ahead. But I won't trouble you with those since they're so miserable. But one of the interesting things is that they've looked at the cost of both budgets that we've had under this government, increasing employers' national insurance and lowering the threshold at which it kicks in, and said that the consequence of that is that it now costs 7% more to hire a graduate employee, or indeed a young entry-level role. And that is, as they say, dampening labour market dynamism. Well, that's one way to put it. A 7% increase in the cost of hiring graduates and new starters, what's happened? People are hiring fewer of them. They expect unemployment to rise from 5.1% as it stands today to 5.4% sometime this year. So they are laying the blame for that firmly and rightly at the feet of the Chancellor.
Christian talks same time tomorrow. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. Details on some of those stories, of course, on his paper. Right, 7:39. Bert in Tooting. Bert, you've done some research. You've done some thinking about so-called trust in politics. Tell the listeners what you've worked out. Good morning.
Good morning, Janik. Yeah, OK, so thanks. Look, trust in politics, you know, Starmer was talking about that. Frankly, it's on the floor. The public are fed up with it. Mm. If you look at the last 18 months, some of the appointments he's made, he'd had to leave their positions. Louise Haig, telephone issue. Tulip Haig, housing and now some overseas conviction, allegedly. Angela Rayner, stamp duty shenanigans. What was all that about? Mm-hmm. And now Mandelson. I mean, crikey, where does the list end? Now, those are just the ones at the top of my head. There's others, too.
Have they got an even worse whiff about them than the Conservatives?
I would say so, and it goes to the heart of Starmer's judgment and his decision-making abilities and his so-called forensic skills. I mean, come on. If you're running a business and you're hiring senior management who lasted weeks and months, the business would be down the toilet. It's a joke. It's a fiasco.
What? Is there anything he can do to put this right?
Honest answer, I don't know. I mean, what does the public think? Look at Starmer's positions in the polls. Public are fed up with it. You know, unemployment up, inflation up, taxes up, business confidence on the floor. Focus on the economy. Focus on the people of this country and start putting their priorities first. That's what I'd say to Starmer.
But thank you, and thanks for going through the list, and we'll have more calls on this. Jason, you'll be the next caller, but as I mentioned earlier in this hour, two men died in a light aircraft crash on farmland near Rochdale yesterday morning. This confirmed by Greater Manchester Police. Police say they don't believe anyone else was on board. There are no reported injuries on the ground either. Here with the details, LBC's North West correspondent, Chris Chambers. Chris, morning.
Morning, Nick. This crash happened in a vast, open, exposed area of the moors in a village called Littlebridge, just outside Rochdale. The weather yesterday was really challenging, some very strong wind. Visibility was difficult as well, with low cloud and mist. And what we've been told by Greater Manchester Police is this plane has come down on the moors around an hour or so after leaving Birmingham Airport, with both men being pronounced dead at the scene. Now, the first thing I noticed at the scene was a huge yellow parachute tangled up in an electricity pylon. We understand that to be something called the CAPS, or the CAP system, which these light Cirrus aircraft have. It's essentially a parachute that can be deployed if the plane stalls or gets into problems, and that will help it float down to a gentle landing. But it would appear the parachute has got caught up in the pylon, and the plane itself ended up going upside down and landing in the undergrowth. There was a big, huge emergency response to this. The scene remains in place this morning. The air accident investigation teams have now taken things over, and they will look to work out exactly what's happened. But the tragedy, of course, is that two men have very sadly lost their lives.
Chris James, LBC's Northwest correspondent, reporting 7:42. A couple of people, Shivani and Marcin, saying you didn't hear the Waitrose basket price when we were going through the supermarket. Sorry if we talked over that. It came in at £886, £886, which does put it rather at the top end of that. Let's come back to our conversation about Lord Mandelson, probably soon to be Peter Mandelson, by the way, and this idea of trust as espoused by Sir Keir Starmer. Jason in Wimbledon. Jason, your reaction.
Yeah. Hello. Good morning, Nick. Nick, things are not looking good at the moment.
No,
I mean, we've still got a great country at the moment, but it's becoming such an embarrassment now. We've had the Tories that became an big embarrassment, so they got kicked out, and Labour got a massive majority. And now we've got all this embarrassment also from Labour.
But they're no better, are they, Jason?
No, they're no better. And to be honest, Nick, I think that it's really terrible that a lot of the people think that the answer is reform. That's how bad things are.
But you can't blame voters, Jason. The two heritage parties, for want of a better expression. You're absolutely right. The Conservatives were completely and utterly a busted flush at the end of their reign. And Labour have got there in world record time. Don't be surprised people look at Reform and Green.
No, I'm not surprised at all, Nick. I mean, I've looked at them myself about it, but I think, to be honest, the first things that should happen in this country at the moment, I think if they've... The only thing they seem to want is the power. We've got the royal family, we've got a king, and the king should make. If he's got any power, if he's king,
can't.
He should make Andrew face the music the papers, Nick.
I see. Sorry, I thought you were going to talk about political arena, because he can't really stray into the political arena. That's the deal of a constitutional
monarchy. No, he should make Andrew face the music over Epstein.
Would you want to almost certainly send your... Let me phrase this carefully. Would you want to put your brother in a position where he could go behind bars in a foreign country?
Nick, to be honest, if it was anything to do with paedophilia, yes.
All right, Jason, thank you. Andrew Mountbatten, Windsor, denies all charges. Jason probably speaking for many, many people. We'll continue with this, but coming up after the news, it's an eye-catching pledge. NHS Cancer Plan expects to save 75% of sufferers. Professor Peter Johnson, National Clinical Director for Cancer at NHS England, says early diagnosis is the key.
We need to keep focusing heavily on diagnosing cancer as early as possible, because we know that's what makes the biggest difference. If we can catch cancer at an early stage, then that improves the chances of surviving it.
Health Secretary Wes Streeting joins us after this. 7:45 LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Andrew Mountbatten, Windsor, is understood to have moved from his Windsor mansion to the Sandringham estate. The Metropolitan Police has confirmed it started a criminal investigation into Peter Mandelson. And ministers are promising to increase the number of people who survive cancer in England. LBC weather, cloudy for most with bright spells in southern areas after a foggy start. Rain confined to the north of Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M11 remains closed southbound between Junction 7 at Harlow and the M25 junction. And that's following an accident after a car overturned earlier this morning. There are lengthy delays back past Junction 7A at Harlow, and surrounding routes, especially the A414 through Harlow, are extremely busy. Now elsewhere, the M40 traffic is being held northbound at the M25 junction. And that's also following an accident. Very busy on the M23. Southbound at Junction 8 at the M25. So if you're heading that way towards Gatwick Airport, do allow yourself extra time. And very busy on the A1M southbound to Junction 8 at Stevenage. That's where a car's broken down.
LBC. What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers? Vampire facials? Forest bathing? Really? The real secret to feeling young? Simply living young. And with a new Seat Ibiza, you can roll young with a £2,000 Seat contribution. Or the new Seat Arona with a £3,000 Seat contribution. Both at 6.9% APR representative. Seat. Rolling young. With Solutions PCP, ordered by 31st of March 2026. Indemnities may be required. Seat Finance.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad! Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Check you're on track for a happy retirement with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Exactly 10 minutes before 8 is the time. Check your clock, your watch, check your mobile phones. Got it right. Waiting for the Health Secretary, which actually allows me to feature some of the texts and social media that are coming in on this. And there is no shortage. You're asking what's happened to your trust in politics. Lawrence says, has everyone got these bugs at the moment, haven't they? I do apologise. It's gone now, I promise. Well, not gone, but that cough has gone. I'm a total Labour and Keir Starmer fanboy, but, and Lawrence has that in capitals, my confidence in both is shaken to the core by one very small and immensely important factor of the last few days. The fact was third-party politicians and the public who reported Mandelson to the police, not the government. This is a huge point no one is talking about. Because of this, Starmer and Labour may have started their total downfall. Well, that, of course, could be exacerbated by events today. We'll give you a little bit more on how that political aspect would work, but the Conservatives as a party has effectively, because like an opposition motion, and it falls on this day, and that is what they are going to be driving to do, to have a full revelation of all the WhatsApps, the emails, whatever correspondence there was concerning Mandelson's appointment. Let's keep going. Paul in Linslade, is there any word from Alistair Campbell? Worth a call to him? Please, you think we haven't tried? And Tony Blair, anything to say? Well, I don't know that we've tried the former Prime Minister. We have tried Alistair Campbell, and he's actually staying rather quiet. Darren in Bedford says, I always thought there was a whiff around Lord Mandelson and money. He bought a fabulous house in Regent's Park 20 years ago on a politician's salary. How did he get behind that? Shailesh in Wembley, he was behind the scenes involved in the dodgy dossier during the Iraq War in the Blair government. The war backfired, and then one of the byproducts was that it landed Europe with the current refugee crisis. More broadly on the idea of the level of trust that you have in politics, Scott in West Hampton says, I now have zero trust in British politics. We seem to go from one scandal to the next in this country. I'm no longer proud to even call myself British. Tony says, can we trust the Metropolitan Police to investigate? Bring in a top copper from Australia or New Zealand to investigate with impartiality? I don't think you want to be doing that, because that would be the most appalling sign of utter lack of confidence in our police officers. Remember, it could be the Thames Valley that will be involved as well, because if there are allegations concerning sexual events that went on, which Andrew Mountbatten Windsor denies, but if the allegations concern, of course, Windsor, then that is going to be the Thames Valley force that will be looking. So that is two independent forces. But I do note to your point, when you say the idea, Tony, of bringing an outside force, the Met have already had a look, of course, once at he was then Prince Andrew, now Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, and found there was nothing to see here. Now you have to think, with the extraordinary weight of evidence and these millions of files that are being released, does that change the whole situation and the pressure? This comes in from Lee. Consider the possibility Mandelson was given the appointment as ambassador over the highly respected incumbent because of links to Epstein, the soft power he'd have with a fellow great friend and friend of Epstein. Well, it was Peter Kyle, who is the business secretary, who admitted that it was a risk putting Lord Mandelson in as the ambassador, but also pointing to, and understandably, but that events weren't really as would be expected in the US at the moment, which seemed to vindicate that appointment. Right, let's close down for now, then the social media and the text coming in on this, and turn to this extraordinary, ambitious plan that 3 in 4 cancer patients will survive the disease thanks to a revolution in medicine over the next 10 years. This promise, put forward by Wes Streeting, the Health Secretary, as he announces a national cancer plan to improve NHS care, which, this is a figure that jumps out the page, could save 320,000 lives in around 9 years' time. More details on that now with Health and Social Care Secretary Wes Streeting, who joins me now. How are you going to get to this ambitious target, Mr. Streeting? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, look, over the course of the next decade, we're going to see a revolution taking place in medical science and technology that will not only enable us to diagnose earlier and treat faster, but potentially to be able to predict and prevent illness. And we've got some of our best scientists now talking about a world in which we'll have cancer vaccines. So that's really exciting. However, people won't need to wait a decade to see progress. And in fact, during this parliament, our goal is to return the NHS to the cancer standards it should have always been meeting, but hasn't met for over a decade. Whether that's getting your diagnosis or all clear within 28 days, which is a target we've now started to achieve in my first 18 months as Health Secretary, or the crucial target of 62 days from referral to treatment, which we are not yet meeting. And we're going to do that by investing in diagnostic tests and scans, over £2 billion that will deliver 9.5 million tests by the end of this parliament, £6 billion worth of capital investment that will particularly benefit in terms of things like the robotic surgery that took my kidney and its cancer out. And we're also looking at what we can do to prevent illness and take action on a wide range of other issues that people have raised with us, like the Children's Cancer Travel Fund, which you discussed with my colleague and friend Karen Smith on your programme yesterday morning. All of those things make me optimistic, and crucially, they will change the dial for cancer care in this country, because at the moment it's a lottery. And whether or not you survive is dependent on whether it's caught early enough. And the sad truth is that as we stand here today, you are less likely to win that lottery of life if you live in this country compared to other European countries. That's how badly we've lagged behind. So lots to do. This plan sets out how we'll get there, and I'm really, really proud to be launching it today, not least as a cancer survivor myself.
And obviously I wish you nothing but success with that, and you write movingly about your cancer journey in one of the newspapers, The Times, today, where listeners can see more. But if you'll allow me, Mr. Streeting, to liken this to effectively scaling Mount Everest, you're not going to do it overnight. So what are the staging posts that you're setting yourself? Where do you want to be in, say, 12 months' time? Where do you want to be at the end of this parliament?
Yeah, that's right, Nick. So what I want to see is year-on-year improvement towards hitting that goal by the end of the parliament of making sure that people get a diagnosis or the all clear within 28 days. Both of those things are important, by the way. Anyone who's ever worried about whether or not they've got cancer will know that enormous fear you have before the result, and then the relief when you get the all clear, or the certainty of knowing that you've got cancer, but the NHS has got you and you're on to treatment. That then needs to happen within 62 days. We're not hitting that standard yet. I want to see us making progress over the course of this parliament, hitting it by the end of the parliament. If I can get there sooner, I will, but I'd rather under-promise and over-deliver rather than over-promise and then let people down. And we are making progress, but there is so much more to do, right, and people can judge us on that progress over the course of this parliament, a bit like where we are on waiting lists, access to GPs, ambulance response times. We're seeing real improvements in all of those areas. But I would be the first to say, having gone round hospitals over Christmas, caught up with MPs since we came back in January, for all the progress we're making, there are many, many more problems still to solve. And I'd be the first to say that, not least to people who are listening this morning who may well have had a bad experience rather than those who've just had the good experiences.
All right. While I have you for a couple of minutes, you won't be surprised there are other matters that we need to discuss, notwithstanding the importance.
Yeah.
And again, I wish you my very best, and I'm sure all my listeners, who everyone wants this to work for you, so good luck to you and all your teams working on that. But we do have to discuss other matters.
Oh, thank you.
Indeed. Good luck with that, Wes Streeting. What are we to make of Sir Keir Starmer's supposedly forensic barrister-like skills, former director of public prosecutions, in that he placed so much trust in Peter Mandelson to become our ambassador without, apparently, an interview and without the usual vetting?
Well, there was vetting before and since Peter Mandelson's appointment as US ambassador. But what we've seen in not just recent days with the latest tranche of files, but in recent months, is evidence of a shocking betrayal of two prime ministers, of our country and our national interest, and also of Epstein's victims through Peter Mandelson's continued association and friendship with him after his conviction. And I don't want to comment on the police investigation because that I'd get in trouble if I did that. So putting that to one side, let me just say to your listeners, I don't need a copy of the ministerial code in front of me, and I don't need a copy of the law of the land in front of me to know that what Peter Mandelson did was outrageous. Passing sensitive government information to outsiders, including market-sensitive information, is so obviously stupid and irresponsible and reckless that most of us cannot get our head around how he would have ever shown such misjudgment. And
What about the Prime Minister's misjudgment, Mr. Streeting?
Well, in defence of the Prime Minister, Peter Mandelson was appointed as US ambassador because of his experience as this country's business secretary, his experience as an EU trade commissioner, in both roles, including by political opponents. He was praised for his conduct in those jobs. And that plus his political experience at a sensitive time for UK-US relations, trade and wider global uncertainty meant that he had a set of skills that it was felt were needed in Washington.
Let me ask you this.
As we have seen through the release of this information, that does not outweigh in any way his complete error of judgment.
Former Shadow Chancellor John McDonnell told my colleague Andrew Marr on LBC last night this could bring the government down. That has been echoed by Bill Rammell, a former Labour minister who served under both Tony, now Sir Tony Blair, and Gordon Brown. Is that overblown? Could this bring the government down?
I think that would be to let Peter Mandelson off the hook. This is his misjudgment, his misconduct, his irresponsibility. Those are things which I think are unquestionably true, having seen it in black and white. There can be no justification for his actions. Whether or not it meets a criminal threshold is for the police to decide. But regardless of that, people up and down the country have been horrified by what they see. Mm. And that sense of betrayal is felt deeply in the Labour Party, because we also feel it is a betrayal of our values. And people who knew Peter Mandelson, and I put that deliberately in past tense, people who knew Peter Mandelson are shocked by this. We did not expect, in fact, it just sort of says that, you know, people who knew Peter Mandelson really didn't know him at all, because no one would have expected this kind of action or behaviour from him.
Is that why you've deleted a social media post from 2019 when a very fresh-faced Wes Streeting is campaigning with Peter Mandelson?
Oh, I deleted that and another picture because it had people in it that are not me and
would not want to be associated with
Peter Mandelson. I deleted them yesterday because I've left plenty of other posts up there of mine praising Peter Mandelson, because I believe in transparency. I believe in accountability.
If your mobile phone were to ring later today and you saw Lord Mandelson's number, what would you say to him? Would you take the call, and what would you say?
No, I wouldn't take the call, and I have not communicated with him since he was sacked as the US ambassador, and I have no plans to do so ever again.
Last minute or so together, you're aware of the former Little Mix singer Jesse Nelson calling on the government to give routine SMA, spinal muscular atrophy. I know you've met with the woman, and I know you've met with campaigners. Can you give us any form of an update, Mr. Streeting?
Yeah, we're looking into extending the programme, the screening programme that's been already planned for trial, to see if we can cover all babies. We're looking into that right now. As soon as I've got progress, I've promised to report back to Jesse and the wider SMA community, and I will certainly report back to you and LBC.
Grateful for that. Lastly, a new documentary comes out today on Netflix highlighting growing doubts from lawyers and medical professionals about Lucy Letby's conviction. Previously, you've told LBC you believe in those legal rulings. Is your strength and confidence in any way diminished by this?
Unless and until there is a judicial process that says that the court's got it wrong, I have to continue to have confidence in the court's judgments, and I'm certainly not going to provide a running commentary. I can see there's an active campaign on this, and there is a judicial process. If people think the courts have got it wrong, they can bring forward their evidence, they can test it and challenge it in the usual way, but it's absolutely not for me to comment. As far as I'm concerned, Lucy Letby is a convicted criminal, and convicted of some of the most serious crimes imaginable. And unless and until that changes, I will continue to support the judgment of the courts, unless that judgment is successfully challenged through evidence, not through campaigning.
Wishing you nothing but success for your NHS cancer plan and all the colleagues working on it. Thanks for going into such detail here on LBC. Wes Streeting, Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, taking us to 4 minutes after eight. News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor is understood to have moved from his Windsor mansion to the Sandringham estate. The relocation was announced by Buckingham Palace in October, following pressure over his ties with Jeffrey Epstein. Royal editor of The Sun, Matt Wilkinson, broke the story and spoke to LBC.
He left Monday evening, the cover of darkness, and he's in to begin his exile or retirement, whichever way you want to phrase it. And he's staying at Wood Farm Cottage on the Sandringham estate. Now, this is a temporary house before he moves next door to a more permanent home. So it's kind of interesting that it's happened all of a sudden this week in the cover of darkness on Monday night while all these headlines were swirling around.
Thames Valley Police is assessing claims that a woman was sent to the UK by Jeffrey Epstein for a sexual encounter with Andrew in 2010. The former prince has previously denied any wrongdoing. The Conservatives say they will try to force the government to release vetting documents for Lord Mandelson. He's being criminally investigated over allegations that he leaked sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein back in 2009. Sir Keir Starmer's facing accusations of poor judgment for appointing Peter Mandelson as his US ambassador. Speaking to Nick in the past few minutes, the Cabinet Minister Wes Streeting pushed back on suggestions the saga will erode public trust and bring the government down.
I think that would be to let Peter Mandelson off the hook. This is his misjudgment, his misconduct, his irresponsibility. Those are things which I think are unquestionably true, having seen it in black and white. There can be no justification for his actions. Whether or not it meets a criminal threshold is for the police to decide.
LBC has contacted Peter Mandelson, but he's previously denied any wrongdoing. Ministers are promising that far more patients will survive cancer for 5 years or longer from 2035. The ambition is part of the government's new cancer plan for England. The proposals also promise developments in robot-assisted surgery and quicker treatment. Peace talks between Ukraine and Russia are due to resume in Abu Dhabi later. President Zelensky has accused Moscow of choosing terror over diplomacy. It follows Russian attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure over the past few days. And rules on fostering could be changed in England as part of plans to create 10,000 more places for young people by 2029. Under the plans, people who rent, are single, unmarried or work full-time will be able to open their homes to children in need of care. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 10,314. It closed down 26 yesterday. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.16. LBC weather, cloudy for most with bright spells in southern areas after a foggy morning. Rain will be confined to northern Scotland by the afternoon. A high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, have you got anything to help my money go further?
Well, if you want to make some big savings, make sure to use Nectar Prices and your Nectar Prices at Sainsbury's. Together they can save you over £450 a year on your food shop.
Bring it on.
Download the Nectar app and tap into great savings. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus Nectar app required. For full terms, see help.sainsburys.co.uk/help/nectar-prices.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call and WhatsApp message now 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Good morning to you. It's 8 minutes after eight on Wednesday, February the 4th. A little bit behind the clock after that extended interview with Wes Streeting, and we got him a little bit late as well on what's called the media round. So let's get straight in to a conversation. I will just say we will, of course, return to, in journalistic terms, the biggest story of the day. Of course we will. Lord Mandelson. But I do think pressure now moves to Sir Keir Starmer, the process by which Kemi Badenoch hopes to have a debate now on whether we see all the WhatsApps and the messages and the emails pertaining to Mandelson's appointment are released. And, of course, we've got the royal aspect as well, the midnight flit by the former Prince Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. Now, that's the biggest journalistic story. The biggest health story by a country mile is the one I was discussing, and we'll play you just a little bit of it again. The bold and the ambitious plan by the government, 3 in 4 cancer patients will survive the disease thanks to a revolution in medicine over the next 10 years. Within the last 10, 15 minutes or so, I was speaking with Health Secretary Wes Streeting, and I started off the interview by asking how he expects to reach that ambitious target within 10 years.
Over the course of the next decade, we're going to see a revolution taking place in medical science and technology that will not only enable us to diagnose earlier and treat faster, but potentially to be able to predict and prevent illness. And we've got some of our best scientists now talking about a world in which we'll have cancer vaccines. So that's really exciting. However, people won't need to wait a decade to see progress. And in fact, during this parliament, our goal is to return the NHS to the cancer standards it should have always been meeting, but hasn't met for over a decade. Whether that's getting your diagnosis or all clear within 28 days, which is a target we've now started to achieve in my first 18 months as Health Secretary, or the crucial target of 62 days from referral to treatment, which we are not yet meeting. And we're going to do that by investing in diagnostic tests and scans, over £2 billion that will deliver 9.5 million tests by the end of this parliament, £6 billion worth of capital investment that will particularly benefit in terms of things like the robotic surgery that took my kidney and its cancer out. And we're also looking at what we can do to prevent illness and take action on a wide range of other issues that people have raised with us, like the Children's Cancer Travel Fund, which you discussed with my colleague and friend Karen Smith on your programme yesterday morning. All of those things make me optimistic, and crucially, they will change the dial for cancer care in this country, because at the moment it's a lottery. And whether or not you survive is dependent on whether it's caught early enough. And the sad truth is that as we stand here today, you are less likely to win that lottery of life if you live in this country compared to other European countries. That's how badly we've lagged behind. So lots to do. This plan sets out how we'll get there, and I'm really, really proud to be launching it today, not least as a cancer survivor myself.
Which he writes about, as I said earlier, in one of the newspapers. We'll speak to someone from Cancer Research UK in just a moment, but should we quickly do some sums? So it's about 3.5 years to go, broadly speaking, of this government, right? This is going to take 10 years. If Wes Streeting is the politician who improves waiting lists on the NHS and starts to move us towards 75%, i.e. 3 out of 4 people surviving cancer, with the leadership of the Labour Party, if it survives this year, but certainly, well, he'll walk into the job, won't he? But let's get away from the political arena and focus on health now. Louise Stewart, Cancer Research UK Ambassador, breast cancer survivor herself, joins me now. We did a bit of research, Louise, if I may call you that. The current survival rate is around 50%. How doable is this goal or this target? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Always good to speak to you, especially on World Cancer Day.
Indeed.
I think it's a bold plan, as others have said. I think part of the issue with it is it doesn't matter. I mean, we're talking about investment, but it's not that much if you look at it. I think it's 3% above inflation. Mm. But it's the shortfall in cancer specialists that we need. We don't have these people waiting in the wings to suddenly make the difference. You know, the Royal College of Radiologists saying there's insufficient cancer specialists to meet the demand. So that's one thing. What is really good is the focus on, I mean, I talk about this all the time, Nick. I've talked to you about it before. Early diagnosis is key. If you get it earlier, your chance of survival, that's why I'm speaking to you 9 years in remission, because my breast cancer was caught early. So that is good. And that means that if you get one of these tests, and they're going to focus more on testing, the bowel testing kits we get through the letterbox. If you get it through the letterbox, don't just shove it aside or throw it in the bin. Use it, send it back. It could save your life.
I know. I think we've talked about this. It's not a particularly pleasant process, but we have to do it when we reach a certain
age. So I think that's good. The one thing that surprised me somewhat, Nick, is he was talking, Wes Streeting, on your programme, I heard him earlier, about, you know, cancer vaccines as if this is some brand new thing that, is going to be sort of happening in the UK. This is happening elsewhere already. A very close friend of mine had stage 4 bowel cancer. She's still alive because she happens to live in Luxembourg and not the UK. And I know that's a stark thing to say, but she had a specialist cancer vaccine and it saved her life. We are way behind the curve. not just on vaccines. If you get cancer here compared to in Australia, bowel cancer, 10% less chance of survival than in Australia. So there's a lot to be done. This plan doing a lot of heavy lifting.
One thing that jumps out from our conversation, Louise, which I wish I'd known and I would have put to the health secretary, is that we are so desperately short of these qualified surgeons and consultants and doctors. Do you have a sort of percentage or an idea of just how far behind we are the next time I speak with him or one of his colleagues?
Yeah, 30% shortfall in radiologists.
Right.
15% in clinical oncologists. So, you know, doctors, that's doctors that oversee non-surgical cancer treatments, so chemotherapy, immunotherapy. So, you know, these people are not waiting in the wings, as I say, Nick, to come on and rescue this, the plan.
No.
Where are we getting this workforce from?
I mean, a simple economics tells me we're trying to do more with less then, which never works.
Well, it doesn't work because, you know, it's patient numbers, isn't it? You know, if you need chemotherapy or I need chemotherapy, you need someone there to deliver it. So it's not like we can, you know, a lot of it, they're talking about robotic surgery. That's all great. A lot of this is good. But how are we going to implement it, I think, is always the key question.
Louise, be well. Enjoy speaking with you. Louise Stewart, Cancer Research UK Ambassador and Breast Cancer Survivor. Carol, you'll be the first caller straight after the news. And on another health matter, Metropolitan Police officers took a total of more than 133,000 sick days due to mental health issues. Ben Pearson is a former officer, medically discharged after suffering with PTSD. He said,
"Something inside snapped, and it were at that point I thought, something's not right, and I'm going down a slippery slope into what I'd describe as the abyss."
8:15 LBC News headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
Andrew Mountbatten Windsor is understood to have moved from his Windsor mansion to the Sandringham estate. Speaking to Nick, a cabinet minister has pushed back on suggestions that controversy surrounding Peter Mandelson will bring down the government. And ministers are promising that far more patients will survive cancer for 5 years or longer from 2035. LBC weather, cloudy for most with brighter spells in southern areas after a foggy start. Rain confined to northern Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M11 is closed southbound between Junction 7 at Harlow and the M25 junction. And that was after a car overturned earlier this morning. And there are lengthy delays back past Junction 7A at Harlow North. Also long delays on the M40 northbound towards the M25 junction. It's because of an accident. Only one lane is open and there are delays back onto the A40 from Hillingdon. The A1M's very busy southbound to Junction 8 at Stevenage in the A602. That's where a car broken down, and very busy on the M3 northbound at Junction 3 at Lightwater. There's been two separate accidents on that stretch. And on the trains, Windrush line services remain suspended between Sydenham and West Croydon.
This is LBC.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
Fly into flip-flop mode. There's still time to get up to £500 off package holidays in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale. Or get flights from £28 one way. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Limited availability. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
The reality, then, it's all very well, and I don't say this in a derogatory fashion. I'm sure he believes in it and wants it to happen. But politicians saying, we're going to get that cancer plan, save 75% of sufferers. What's the reality for you? Carol's in Newark-on-Trent. Carol, I understand you have or had a cancer. Is that right? Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Yes, I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2021, January 2021. I was about 72 at the time, and I was no longer on the recall register, but you could still go for mammogram.
When
but
does the recall register end, effectively? At what
around
age?
About 70, I think, around about 69, 70. So I made the appointment to go myself, because I knew it was 3 years since I'd been.
On the NHS, just to clarify.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And then it was picked up, I was called back, and it was picked up that I got, something wrong.
Right.
And I ended up having a lumpectomy done. Yeah, and it was fairly low key. But the ironic part is that people over 70, women over 70, the cancer that I had is the most common. Yet they stop recalling you.
What is it? Does it have a specific name then? When you say it,
I think it's estrogen dependent. So and I think it's very common in ladies over 70.
I see.
And obviously, when I went, rang up for an appointment, it was great. They saw me and all the rest of it. So it wasn't the fact that they wouldn't see me. It was the fact that unless you're proactive.
Yeah.
Subsequent to that, so I'm 5 years this April,
yeah.
Since subsequent to that, in about 2024, I was taken into hospital with pneumonia, which is unrelated.
Right.
But while I was in hospital, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer.
Oh, good gracious.
Mm. And I subsequently went through an operation, a midline cut, which is a major hysterectomy, followed by 6 rounds of chemotherapy, and I'm now on a maintenance drug.
Right.
I would say
how long
will
you be on that drug for, Carol?
Well, I've been on it a year, and initially 2 years, but then it's by the oncologist to review if it's doing any damage to any part of my body, like kidneys and liver and stuff.
So you're the reality behind the headlines. You hear a journalist discussing with the health secretary the ambitions. What do you see as the actual truth behind this, Carol?
I think I was told that ovarian cancer and breast cancer can be linked because of the hormones. And what I would have liked to have seen was, once I was diagnosed with breast cancer, albeit a lowish grade, after that they'd tested my blood markers for ovarian cancer.
Right.
But they don't, unless there's a clinical need. That would be a real step forward, because this could have been caught much earlier.
Lastly, and I wish you nothing but recovery, if you were asked to characterise the level of care you've had with the two cancers you've been diagnosed, the treatments that you've received, in a sentence or so, how would you respond? What would you say about the treatment you've had?
Absolutely brilliant. Cannot fault the hospitals and the chemo unit and everything. Absolutely fantastic. And the oncologist at Umunda at the moment.
Be well. Stay in touch. Carol, thanks for sharing so much. Have a good day. Rob, you'll be the next caller on that. But we're going to talk about other health matters, and these more on the emotional front. Because it was revealed yesterday by figures from Scotland Yard that Metropolitan Police officers took more than 133,000 sick days due to mental health issues, staff blaming increased workloads and witnessing even more trauma. Paul Dodds is the Metropolitan Police Federation chair and joins me now. I'm so sorry, Paula. Did I say Paula? I do apologise. Paula Dodds. I'm so sorry, Paula. If it's any consolation, I've got a bit of a cold, so I think I did say Paula, but it probably didn't come through the thickness of it all. Paula Dodds is Metropolitan Police Federation chair. Paula, you've got to be robust to be a police officer, haven't you? Good morning.
Good morning, hi Nick. Yes, we do. It is part of policing, but I think what we're seeing now is the added impact of trauma over the years in officers' careers is having an impact on mental health, and the stigma isn't there as it was when I joined 20 years ago around being weak and not being able to speak to people around the traumas. And if you imagine, we see an average in our careers of 400 to 600 traumatic events, and it gets to a point where we need support and we need help, and officers are recognising that they need to be fit and healthy to deal with members of the public at their worst days,
but
and the support isn't there.
just to say, I am the son of a former police officer. She served in Kent, not in the Met. A certain person is attracted to this, though, isn't it? Or can I put it to you, if it's not, it might not be the best job for you, because you're going to be where people don't want to go. You're going to have to knock on doors and tell people that their sons and their daughters and their grandparents have died, sort of thing that I couldn't possibly bear doing. It's not for the faint-hearted, Paula.
No, it's not. And, you know, I've been in policing 21 years, 22 in February, and up until June last year, I was frontline officer, response team, neighbourhoods, public order, and I've seen trauma events, and the calls do stay with you. And back when I started, we didn't talk about mental health. There was no support, and we rely on NHS, charity organisations, for officers to get help, and we do need to be fit and robust, but going to call after call after call, dealing with members of the public at their worst, and we are humans, we do have emotions, that it does have an impact no matter how strong you are, no matter what type of person you are, it will, and it does impact you.
What is the current arrangement for an officer who is suffering some form of trauma, has witnessed an event that's really got to him or her? Do they report to their sergeant? Is there a special counselling line? What's provided?
So what we have in place is within the organisation, occupational health. So you go to your line manager, I'm really struggling, or you go to your GP. There's a helpline number that you can call. That then gets you on
solely within the Met, like on a confidential basis.
Within the Met on a confidential basis. That phone call will then put you in touch with a therapist within a week or two, and then we have six sessions of therapy, and that is what we get after years and years of trauma and events. And so it's not good enough. We shouldn't have officers considering suicide or committing suicide.
No, of course. So you're the Federation chair. What are the officers and others? What are they saying to you? What do they think needs to be done, Paula? Yeah.
We need more training. We need officers to identify when their colleagues are struggling. We need more support. We need more help. We need to not rely on NHS and charity organisations to get that instant support and go through waiting list. The longer... And because the stigma is now disappearing and officers are coming forward asking for help and then having to wait, the public expect us to be on our A game when we're dealing with them. And if we're not, mistakes can be made. If we're not, you know, the public expect us to be better than what they are when they're in those trauma situations. And sometimes it's just we can't be everything to everyone all the time without the help and support. And we need to rely on chief officers to make the right decisions and to put that support in place.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. Metropolitan Police Federation Chair Paula Dodds going over that research. Let's get a couple of your texts and emails, then coming back to you, Kev, regarding a conversation about cancer care. I'm just trying to check I can read this name. Yes. Diana says, as someone who works in cancer care, while we keep talking about general cancer targets rather than patients, we're not going anywhere. Even with all good intentions, there's currently a terrible lack of staff in cancer care, which has not been addressed. Well, it was addressed on the show. You're right, I didn't address it with the Health Secretary because I was told about it, but I promise I will next time. David in Bristol says, a noble cause and a big claim regarding cancer treatment from Mr. Streeting. However, without proof of success, I don't think he should be playing politics with cancer and giving people false hope for votes. Having lost someone close to a five-year battle with cancer before the age of 40 and leaving two young children behind, there's a lot of work to be done. Oh, dear me, David. Condolences there. Kev's in Sittingbourne. Kev, what's your story on this? Good morning.
Hi, Nick.
Hello,
sir. I'll bullet points as quick as I can because it's a little bit long. Okay. Basically, my partner was very big on having her breast checked yearly mm-hmm. with mammograms, and she was a big believer in get it early, save your life.
Yeah.
Back when she caught her cancer, which turned out to be very rare, and it was triggered at the actual breast clinic, they wanted to do a biopsy on a tissue they found. Mm-hmm. And they pulled the whole thing out. It turned out to be benign, but within 2 days of that, she finds a lump. It took us 2 weeks to get back into the breast clinic. Then they're running around like headless chickens because they discover it's a very rare cancer called a metastatic metaplastic, which cannot be treated with chemo. So they've got to get the breasts off as quick as they can now. This thing puts out tentacles. One of the tentacles has come out through the biopsy hole and give her skin cancer of the same grade. I then get a date for the operation, which was 3 weeks away.
Right.
I bring this up with them and say, look, we're in week three. She found this 2 weeks ago. Your maths are wrong. And I keep getting told, we're professionals. There's always a 3-week window of safety. basically, by the time we ended up at the end of that journey, and it was so bad, I managed to, because she caught COVID, they were going to put her back another 4 weeks. Managed to get her an appointment with the same surgeon we see, which was luckily he was down from London. So he was kind of off script, and he was a brilliant guy. Mm. And he said to the nurses, this needs doing tomorrow. I'll clear everything I can do. And they turned around and said, we'll talk to the secretary. And it was Wednesday of the following week. It wasn't him that got to do it. They didn't take enough skin, so she still had this skin cancer. They then discovered where they took so long, it had got into her lung.
Oh.
Yeah. We end up in a different hospital to deal with that problem. We're told chemo, they're going to try and burn the skin cancer off. You have to have markers, one of two, for this thing called immunotherapy, which is a fantastic new way of killing cancer. Mm-hmm. It basically reschedules your own immune system to deal with cancer.
Right.
And it was a silver bullet. But they needed to get that skin cancer off, so all they had was radiotherapy.
Right.
We said, is there anything else? Because they didn't even know if radiotherapy... This is so rare. And I get that. But near her death, we find out that, through a friend watching the Lorraine Kelly show, that Scotland has their own immunotherapy for exactly this tumour on her.
Oh, God.
But NHS England wouldn't buy it because Scotland wanted too much for it. Now, we could have got that privately. And when this head of oncology came in to tell us there's nothing more we can do, and we're like, what? And my partner brought up this Scottish treatment, and she went, oh, yeah, but that would kill you now because you're too weak to take it. So he said, you knew about it when we asked you 4 weeks ago. And she just couldn't answer. She'd given it to some of her private patients, and we could have got it. We would have sourced it, knowing what that you know, if she had the genetic markers.
How old was your partner?
She was 62 when this all came out. She died in 24. And it's just like they just said, sorry, you're too weak to take the immunotherapy now.
And when you hear politicians make these promises, having gone through what you and your partner went through, how do you react?
It's rubbish. He's talking about 3 and 4. They want to sort out, there's 3 and 4 dying.
Yeah.
We were told back then in 24, 1 in 4 survive. 1 in 4 die. So he's almost just flipped what we were told 2 years ago. And they're talking about 28 days now, when not every case is obviously the same. And I know there's a big waiting list, but when you're told chemo can't touch this, and this surgeon, so my partner couldn't find anything about this, this particular cancer, right. And we were going to make a short film about her losing her breast due to the lack of response to finding it. We thought it would end there. And now it's become like a feature I'm trying to do about, because there's so many more problems over, basically it was 5 weeks of what felt like running around trying to keep her alive and nobody coming back with anything. It's like there was a lack of urgency.
I can imagine how you feel. Kev, my condolences. It is so relatively recent for you. Thank you for telling that story. We do have to move on. And coming up later in the show, we will go back to, this is undoubtedly the biggest health story of the day, the biggest political story of the day, is the ramifications of Lord Mandelson stepping down, of course, as a Lord, although he keeps the title currently as a House of Lords. But I'm going to be making the point that all of this, and we sack someone for a glass of Prosecco.
I can understand how infuriating it must be to think that the people who have been setting the rules have not been following the rules, Mr. Speaker, because I was also furious to see that clip.
So who is the greater offender? We'll look at that later in the show. 8:32, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
It's understood Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has now moved out of his Royal Lodge mansion in Windsor. Buckingham Palace announced in October that he'd been told to leave over the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. Speaking to Nick, a cabinet minister has pushed back on suggestions that controversy surrounding Peter Mandelson could bring down the government. He's been criminally investigated over allegations that he leaked sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein back in 2009. And 75% of cancer patients in England will survive the disease by 2035 under a new government promise. That's up from the current rate of 60%, which is below many other European countries. LBC weather, cloudy for most with bright spells in southern areas after a foggy morning. Rain confined to the north of Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
on the latest episode of The News Agents.
The Mandelson files are handed from the Cabinet Office to the Metropolitan Police. Is this shaping up to be potentially the worst corruption scandal in British politics for the last half century?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Done. Move that. And, oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
Insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Oh, hello, love. Good day.
Right. Thanks for joining this all-staff meeting.
It's just you and me.
So, I think that we need to revisit tonight's dinner plans.
Okay.
Busy day. A lot of KPIs. A lot of KPIs. Gonna need you to order some spaghetti, tomatoes, a bottle of white, and two sticky toffee puddings. Let's circle back after you've ordered an Uber Eats.
Sure.
When you've officed enough, Uber Eats. And get all your groceries delivered. Check out for terms and restrictions.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto, from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:35, come back to the hugely important conversation about cancer and those targets in a moment. But here's something that might be worth discussing. People are suggesting that this scandal involving Lord Mandelson, quotes Lord, close quotes Mandelson, is as big as the Profumo affair. Now, we're going to tell you later in the show, because even I think I was just born, I can't recall. But I only know about it because I'm a journalist. There's no reason on earth, particularly if you're a younger person, you might just vaguely know the name. But why was it a scandal of such magnitude? Now, the biggest scandal since then, really, there have been no shortage. There's been the expenses scandal and goodness knows what else. But we now look at the time when we have this inquiry going on now, which involves allegations of serious financial misdeeds. The possibility of playing money on the markets, denied by everyone, let's get that in there. €1 trillion bailout being leaked, allegedly, to Jeffrey Epstein. The allegations of all sorts of sexual crimes and peccadilloes as well, involving a former royal prince. And we sacked, or effectively a prime minister lost his job over having a glass of Prosecco. I mean, has that slightly gone out of context? Let's go back to COVID times. Boris Johnson getting into hot water over his advisor's Dominic Cummings trip to Barnard Castle and Partygate.
I've had extensive face-to-face conversations with Dominic Cummings. I think he followed the instincts of every father and every parent, and I do not mark him down for that. I understand and share the anger up and down the country at seeing number 10 staff seeming to make light of lockdown measures. And I can understand how infuriating it must be to think that the people who have been setting the rules have not been following the rules. I have learned enough to know that there were things we simply did not get right. And I must take responsibility.
Boris Johnson defending Dominic Cummings in May 2020, apologising for Partygate after footage emerged of senior Number 10 officials joking and laughing at a Downing Street Christmas party in December 2021, an apology for Partygate in the House of Commons in 2022. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not for one moment suggesting that Johnson didn't get it wrong. He got it hopelessly, totally, and politically and professionally, fatally wrong. But if his judgment was called into question over a slice of birthday cake and a glass of Prosecco, what of a supposedly forensically skilled barrister-like Prime Minister and former Director of Public Prosecutions who managed to bring Peter Mandelson back and presumably either chose not to or was not given or did not seek enough of his cabinet, of his civil service vetting? Staying with Dominic Cummings, let's remind you of this one-in-a-million exchange with senior cabinet minister Michael Gove seeking to defend Dominic Cummings' trip to Barnard Castle.
Would you go on a 60-mile round trip to test your eyesight?
I have, on occasions in the past, driven with my wife in order to make sure that... what's the right way of putting it?
I'm staggered. I don't know how you're going to get out of this one, but it's going to be fun.
No. I think people who know me would know that I'm not an authority on driving, and that I'm not the best person in the world to ask detailed questions about driving.
No, I merely asked you if you've ever been on a 60-mile round trip to test your eyesight, and you said you had. I mean, why not go to Specsavers?
Well, I've subsequently got in. No, the point that I was seeking to make is that I'm not an authority on driving.
And this is what you're saying on social media. Dean, you're being stupid. This is me. Nick, you're being stupid. It was not just a glass of Prosecco that sealed his fate. It was far more than that. Boris was a disgrace and deserved to go. Stuart simply says, Boris is the greater offender. He set the rules. He told us rightly to follow the rules. And then he blatantly ignored the rules. Well, yeah, but we all knew when he came in he was a bit of a buffoon. Sir Keir is meant to be, I say again, this forensically skilled barrister and former director of public prosecutions. Tom might be more on the money here. Both are sackable offences. The difference is that Mandelson should also be prosecuted. You cannot compare the two offences as they're both completely different, although both show complete contempt for the British public. Well, remember, we were told by the incoming Prime Minister that he was going to rebuild trust in politics. His words, not mine. Ben's in Swansea. Ben, what do you want to say to this? Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. Well, I've got this minor cold, but frailty is not indulged, so we go on. Which is the greater offender?
I would say Mandelson. My point, and really why I wanted to call in today, is to make a wider point about what's happening. It appears that the security services are implicated in this.
Could be,
And this is we're not just talking about Mossad. This is a joint issue. There doesn't seem to be any faith nationally with any security services to their nations. They're just kind of playing shadow government with corporate entities. You know, they are effectively lobbying by blackmail, by using people like Epstein or Jean-Luc Brunel, the people like Dutroux in France in past decades. I mean, this is such a huge story. And it basically shows that there isn't a democracy. We have this illusion of a democracy when really it's corporate entities who, you know, treat our security services as rent boys. I'm sorry to say that. Can you say that at this time in the morning?
I'll let it go.
Thank you. And they are treated as such by these corporate entities, and they will entrap policymakers to enact beneficial policy decisions.
Where do you see the story going next?
Well, I hope that there's a huge discussion now around the involvement of some of these major institutions. As I said to your producer, these institutions who we have been told to trust, mm-hmm. and that we have been told to put our faith in for ever, you know, for decades since their inception. And now it turns out that they, you know, they don't exist on the same plane as us. They operate on a completely different level. They employ tactics just so disgusting as to take advantage of child sex abuse and things of this nature. And I just think, like, that alone, you know, that should be such a red flag to the public now. They need to look at this and they need to understand that our vote doesn't have any power. You know, the idea that we can change policy is false. What really changes policy is unfortunately, schemes like this, entrapment, blackmail, coercion by entities that are inevitably or have been employed through the security services by some sort of entity working on behalf of a corporate, a big corporate. And I
will end it there. I need to throw in, of course, Lord Mandelson currently denies all the charges against him, and indeed, Metro Police has only just begun its investigation. Ben, thank you. Utah says, what Johnson did was utterly disgusting. What Mandelson is doing is utterly disgusting. One does not negate the other. We'll return. We'll tell you what the Profumo affair was all about later in the show. But let's come back to the conversation. What a goal. What a target. If the government is able to save 75% of those diagnosed with a cancer. Gabs in Hendon. Gabs, what are you going to tell me? Good morning. Thank you for hanging
on. Good morning. That's okay. No problem. Have to be patient these days. Listen, I was in 2020, I moved back to London from Spain.
Yeah.
And that's another story for another day. Right. Anyway, so in 2022, as you do in the morning, you go to work. It was a Wednesday morning, it was cold, and I was going to work. And before that, I had a shower. And I found this thing in my breast.
Right.
And I'm like, what is this?
So it's like a lump or a bump, just to clarify.
Yes, it was a lump. Yeah. And I think maybe it was because I've had two children. I don't know.
Mm.
Anyway, fast forward, I had a call with the doctor the same day and said, I found something. She said to me, you're to come in immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Back then in 2022, we're still in COVID. So we still had to be careful. And I'd had COVID as well twice before that.
Right.
Anyway, the doctor sent me on a two-week time, you know, time limit frame.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I went to Israel the following week. I needed a holiday. I was booked anyway. Following week, I came back, went to have my mammogram, and then I had this horrible needle biopsy. Horrible. Oh, my God. I don't wish it on anybody. It was just revolting. The pain, yes. I was black and blue for, like, a month.
So where does that leave you now? We have to sort of move to where we find ourselves now and your reaction to this headline.
Okay, so fast forward 3 weeks, saw the consultant. He diagnosed me with breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Then down the line, about after I'd had three surgeries, I found out I have the BRCA gene.
Oh.
So forget anybody saying they're going to be in the clear. People like myself have the BRCA gene.
Yes.
And you think, what on earth is going on?
And most anyway, what has the treatment been like since?
You know what? I've had to have five surgeries, Nick.
Oh, cracky. Right.
And that's not a lot compared to some people I know. People have to have more surgeries because they want to do this, they want to do that, they found another cancer. But I'm glad to say, thank God, that I'm okay at the moment. I'm on a tracker trial at the Royal Free Hospital,
yes.
And I don't want anybody snobbing them off and saying, oh, they're full of you-know-what and this and that. But they're not. They are decent people.
Right.
They are kind. They've been very good to me 95% of the time.
Well, I'm sorry about that other 5%, but that number is a good one on which to finish. Gabs, be well. Thank you. We will continue to take your calls on that. We're going to tell you what the Profumo affair is. People say, this is the worst scandal since the Profumo affair. What exactly did that mean? And how might this bring down a government? And then she may be a star and the First Lady. But is she a star of the big screen with that movie? Melania will give you a review on that. Plus, you and your husband or wife or partner, girlfriend, boyfriend go to an upmarket restaurant and the children are behaving appallingly. Former TV news reader is in there. Jan Leeming is in the headlines. If you can afford to eat here, you can afford a babysitter. Why can't parents control their children in posh restaurants anymore? We'll have more on that in the next hour. The 8:45 OBC News headlines are read by Dominic Ellis.
It's understood Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has now moved out of his Royal Lodge mansion in Windsor. Speaking to Nick, a cabinet minister has dismissed suggestions that controversy surrounding Peter Mandelson will erode public trust in the government. And ministers are promising that far more patients will survive cancer in England for 5 years or longer from 2035. LBC weather. Cloudy for most with bright spells in southern areas after a foggy morning. Rain confined to northern Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M11 remains closed southbound between Junction 7 at Harlow and the M25 Junction. It's following this serious accident where a car overturned. The investigation works are still taking place. Long delays on the A1M southbound to Junction 8 at the A602 where a car's broken down. Traffic was being held on the M40 northbound at the M25 Junction. It's all been released. All the lanes are back open, but it's still slow back onto the A40 from Hillingdon. Also delays on the M3 northbound up to Junction 4 at Camberley. There are so many problems on the tubes and the trains at Thameslink, Cartwright, Rumpton, Hitchin and Cambridge. In fact, the entire Thameslink, Southern and Gatwick Express networks are severely disrupted, and the Central Line, Cartwright, Rumpton, White City and Ealing Broadway.
This is LBC.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Tuesday night on the sofa, watching telly with Mum again.
May walkers stay with the mothers for life.
This is the moment Stephen chose to speak to Barclays about Mortgage Boost, so he could borrow more with help from family or friends. We're helping first-time buyers get on the property ladder sooner. Search Barclays Mortgages. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
One Prime Minister who definitely did screw up. One Prime Minister who possibly faces a fairly crucial vote. And we're talking about cancer. So shall we lift the mood? I can't pretend the weekend's just around the corner, but I'm over halfway now. Just so. What have you got planned for the weekend? Should we go? Tell you what, darling, let's go to the pictures. Should we go and see Hamnet? Oh, yeah, I quite like that. Or what about The Housemaid? Yeah, have you heard about this Marty Supreme? That's meant to be good. What about Melania, pardon? Melania? Now, Melania debuted at number 29 in the box office. Its takings at 155 cinemas across the UK and Ireland is 32,974 quid. Now, context is everything in life. Hamnet in the same period took 1,412,000 and The Housemaid 1,399,000. So I haven't got them for Marty Supreme. Here are those figures again. Hamnet, 1.4 million. The Housemaid, all but 1.4 million. Melania, 32,000 quid. So what is it actually like? Well, Amazon are going to struggle to recoup their money, aren't they? $75 million. Rotten Tomatoes online film review is giving it a 98% approval rating versus just 6% from the official critics. So what is it like? There's only one way to find out. I sent LBC's Helen Hoddenott to the cinema, to the pictures, with the popcorn, to find out for herself.
Everyone wants to know. So here it is.
I'm not sure who Melania was referring to when she said everyone wants to know the story of her life in the 20 days leading up to her husband's inauguration. But there are four other people in the cinema this afternoon, so perhaps it was them. They've all come alone, but I've come with Alyssa.
Hi, I'm Alyssa, a campaigner with the Stop Trump Coalition.
Let's go and see the film. An absolute highlight of the film is Melania's reaction to Donald Trump calling her after winning the election.
Hi, Mr. President. Congratulations.
Did you watch it?
I did not. Yeah, I will see it on the news.
My favorite thing that I learned about Melania today is that she also gets sick of listening to her husband speak. I've never related to her more than when I saw her struggling to get off the phone with him.
A moment of levity during the succession of motorcades comes as Melania sings along to her favourite song in the car, Billie Jean by Michael Jackson. And after endless dress fittings and tense moments involving a hat, it's time for the inauguration.
The golden age of America begins right now.
During which Melania looks fairly miserable, her face seriously obscured by the brim of that hat, gazing ominously from the enormous cinema screen. So the lights have just come up, the credits are rolling on screen. There were four other people in the cinema. They've just told me that they found it interesting, that they thought it was going to be more posing. The woman told me that she thought it was a big piece of propaganda. What did you make of it?
I mean, I would say if you're trying to make propaganda, it should at least be good. There was no story. You got to know her not at all. I came in not knowing a lot about Melania, and I don't know anything more. Would have been much more interested in her first few days as the First Lady rather than just the fittings to become one. But it was convenient for them to film it before they started deporting everyone because, I mean, by the looks of it, most of their staff would have been deported by their new policies.
And did it touch on many kind of political themes and topics?
Not a single one. I honestly don't think Melania has a clue about a single one of her husband's policies.
So that's Helen and the contributor and four others. So that's... It took 90 quid. Only 75 million... Only God knows how many. $74 million and something to cover. All right, change the mood a bit. 5 to 9, let's come back to cancer. That very, very ambitious pledge from the government. Claire's in Preston. Claire, we're talking about your mother. I understand she's not well. I'm sorry. What is the condition? Good morning.
Hiya, Nick. Actually, all things considered, she's really, really well. She's recovering from she's recovering from breast cancer.
Right.
She was diagnosed in July last year.
Yep.
And from that from the moment she stepped foot in the breast clinic to have a lump checked out, I can't fault anything with regards to the consultants, the nurses, all the different departments she's had to go through. She's had to have CT scans.
Right.
She's had surgery, etc., etc. The only issue is, with all of this, and I think we've been really, really lucky as well, because you hear of other areas where it's not so lucky, they don't get picked up the same. But I think we've been really lucky. The only issue is just the whole infrastructure in terms of the appointment system. It's so inconsistent. So she's been sent appointments via the app,
right.
via email, via text, phone call.
Sorry, the same appointment or separate appointments?
No. All different appointments are different things.
I see.
She's had to go, for example, for a CT scan.
Right.
She's had to be oncology.
But why do they use different... I mean, either stick to letters or stick to WhatsApps. Why do they vary it so much?
I have no idea. It is absolutely ridiculous and such a huge waste of money. So she had an appointment sent to us through the post for the 23rd of December for a review with the oncologist because she was partway through her chemotherapy at that point. It's belts and braces chemotherapy, so...
Right.
Luckily, it's not overly essential, but she was recommended to have it. So she was written to with regards to having a review for the oncologist. She was rung up twice in the lead up to that to change the time of it.
Mm-hmm.
So when we arrived on the day, the oncologist said, I really don't know why you're here. And we looked at him and he said, there's no way I would call for somebody to come and have a review with me face to face when they're partway through chemotherapy.
Right.
So we were all a bit confused as to why this appointment had happened and it'd been sent through the post, et cetera. So anyway, we did have a chat with him while we were there and we did actually get some really good news there that she doesn't carry the BRCA gene.
Good.
So that was good news for her and obviously for me.
It is, it is. I have to leave there, Claire, because I've only got a minute left. Best wishes to your mother, and I'm glad she's doing well. But I've had another call who's been hanging on for a long time, and so thank you, Claire, again. Best to Mum. Donna in Knockin, you've got about a minute, Donna. Go ahead, you have a cancer.
I do, and there's... Morning, Nick.
Good morning.
I've only just found out, 4th of December, I went to get referred. NICE guidelines state 62 days to treatment. I'm at 62 days, another 6 weeks off of actually starting treatment.
Sorry, you're at 62 days now, roughly, and you're another 6 weeks away, yeah. Did you say?
Yeah, between waiting for PET scans and MRIs and then for the MDT, the multidisciplinary team, to have their meeting, which they only have once a week, which is further ahead. And so if you fall in the wrong week, if the results come through on one Wednesday, they won't meet until the following Wednesday to talk about you.
But why are they so far off their target?
Then you have to wait.
Yeah. Do we know why they're so far off their target with you?
I have no idea. They seem to move quite quickly. They said I was on the 2 week pathway. But then you wait 2 weeks for one thing, you wait 2 weeks for the next, and then it's 3 to 4 weeks for a PET scan. And then, you know, everything, it doesn't all happen at once. And I don't know. And what the other lady said about them communicating and talking, I did have a second call from the PET scanners asking me if I wanted to go again.
And when, what does your CAT treatment actually look like? What will they do?
I have no idea. They've suggested it's too far for a radical hysterectomy, but they haven't told me why it's too far or what the plan is, because they don't know the plan. They're waiting for the rest of the information to come through. Meanwhile, I'm sitting here.
All through Christmas and New Year.
Yes, it was, unfortunately.
That's so tough for you. Do you mind awfully for your age?
I'm 52.
So you're a relatively young woman.
Yeah, I have. I think I was just feeling left out this year, Nick. I have one child doing finals at university, one child doing A-levels, and one child doing GCSE.
Oh, my
God. So I think
God.
I just needed a bit of attention for myself.
Oh, well, at least you can laugh through it. Donna, do stay in touch and let us know. My God, it's busy in your house at the moment. Well, I hope that 6 weeks can be shortened, and I hope when they do eventually see you, the news is slightly more positive. Thank you for your input on that. All right, music means we move on, and coming after the news, we come back to the biggest story of the day. Now what happens? A criminal investigation into Lord Mandelson. What's Health Secretary Wes Streeting say to that?
This is his misjudgment, his misconduct, his irresponsibility. Whether or not it meets a criminal threshold is for the police to decide.
And the former newsreader Jan Leeming roasting parents with noisy children who misbehave in upmarket restaurants, saying, and I quote, if you can afford to eat here, you can afford a babysitter. Is it right? The families take their kiddies along. Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, it's understood Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has now moved out of his Royal Lodge mansion in Windsor. Buckingham Palace announced in October that he'd been told to leave over the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. There were further revelations in the last few days. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight is following developments.
Andrew is understood to have made the move on Monday night out of the sprawling Royal Lodge where he's stayed now for more than 20 years. But we are told we could still see him on the Windsor estate as he finishes packing up his life. A source has told the Sun newspaper that leaving Royal Lodge was so humiliating for Andrew that he chose to do it under the cover of darkness.
Andrew has always strongly denied any wrongdoing.
The government says it will release some documents related to its decision to appoint Peter Mandelson as the UK's ambassador to the US. The Conservatives are pushing for details over the vetting process after more revelations over his ties with Jeffrey Epstein. He's been criminally investigated over claims that he leaked sensitive information to Epstein in 2009. Speaking to Nick, the Cabinet Minister Wes Streeting described Peter Mandelson's alleged actions as stupid and irresponsible.
His misconduct, his irresponsibility, those are things which I think are unquestionably true. Having seen it in black and white, there can be no justification for his actions. Whether or not it meets a criminal threshold is for the police to decide. But regardless of that, people up and down the country have been horrified by what they see. Mm. And that sense of betrayal is felt deeply in the Labour Party.
LBC has contacted Peter Mandelson for comment. He's previously denied any wrongdoing. People are being told not to travel on Southern Thames Link and Gatwick Express services this morning. The operator Govia has blamed multiple incidents, including a derailment and a signalling fault. 75% of cancer patients in England will survive the disease by 2035 under a new government promise. That's up from the current rate of 60%, which is below many other European countries. It's a key part of a new national cancer plan. And the rules on fostering in England could be relaxed to try and create 10,000 more places. New plans would open it up to those who are single and married, in rental homes or working full-time. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 were trading up 42 at 10,357. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most with bright spells in southern areas after a foggy morning. Rain confined to northern Scotland, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean? Right, no more.
A chip and a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy? Yeah? Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip crisp combo hot snack thingies in a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 5 minutes after nine on Wednesday, February the 4th. We come back to the biggest political story, arguably the biggest story in the news agenda as well. Lord Mandelson still, Lord Mandelson in name, but that could change fairly swiftly. Well, criminal investigations now underway. And also into the House of Commons, Kenny Badenoch to use something called a humble address. In reality, as with much in that way of life in politics, anything but humble. How does that work? And are we really close to a Profumo Affair style scandal? By the way, I don't expect you to know what that Profumo Affair was, but I found someone who will, and I'll tell you in just a few minutes. In other news, here is the news.
12 rebel Labour MPs have made their final break with the party and will now sit in the Commons as Social Democrats.
The hugely distinctive voice of Jan Leeming there doing the news on the BBC back in 1981. She's in the news again, this time herself. She took a friend to a particularly upmarket restaurant down in Kent and she had a horrible experience saying that parents ruined it with their children screaming, misbehaving and running around the restaurant. Quotes, if you can afford to eat here, you can afford a babysitter. Is she right to go with that? Have you noticed increasingly bad behaviour from parents? And if you go to a restaurant, it's not like your own kitchen or front room or dining room. You should damn well sit there and behave yourself, shouldn't you? And staying with children, one in three autistic young people have missed at least 2 weeks of school since the start of term. We'll look at that in more detail.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I remember when we were talking about the Lord Mandelson affair yesterday, the government minister on the round says it changes, but it seems to change by the day. Well, yesterday, it certainly changed by the hour. At times, it changed by the minute. Probably still giddy with excitement of it all. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, joins me now because we move on. Well, it sounds rather more staid process, but in reality, it's one potential heck of a banana skin. What is a humble address, and why is Kemi Badenoch not looking at it? Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I am still giddy. The news, as you say, was changing every half an hour yesterday. It was so difficult to keep up with the latest twists and turns with Lord Mandelson. And I think we're in for another day of high drama today, Nick. Yes, he has resigned from the House of Lords. Yes, the police are investigating. He is denying criminality and wrongdoing. But here is where it could start getting dangerous for Keir Starmer and the Labour government. Now, Wes Streeting, you spoke to the Health Secretary earlier today. He told you the government are appalled by the latest revelations, but he says it's not Sir Keir Starmer's fault.
I think that would be to let Peter Mandelson off the hook. This is his misjudgment, his misconduct, his irresponsibility. Those are things which I think are unquestionably true, having seen it in black and white. There can be no justification for his actions. Whether or not it meets a criminal threshold is for the police to decide. But regardless of that, people up and down the country have been horrified by what they see. Mm. And that sense of betrayal is felt deeply in the Labour Party, because we also feel it is a betrayal of our values.
You also spoke with the former Labour Minister, Bill Rammell. He said he wants the Prime Minister to go even further and reveal more about Lord Mandelson's appointment.
Keir Starmer showed poor judgment in appointing Mandelson as ambassador to Washington, but he's not the first Prime Minister who's responded to Peter's incredible networking and lobbying. And I think Keir needs to go more fully on the record and talk clearly about why and how Mandelson was appointed and what processes were put in place to ensure that there was no baggage in the background, when clearly there was.
Now, Nick, the Tories have an Opposition Day debate today, so that basically they can use it to take control of the Commons for whatever they want to talk about. And they, of course, are going to try to press the government about Peter Mandelson and what was known about at the time of his appointment as US ambassador. And as you say, Kemi Bade not planning to table a motion in the form of a humble address. It's basically used to call for papers to be released from government departments. It can be debated, it can be voted on. It was used a lot by one man, Nick. I'm not sure if you've heard of him. During the Brexit years, he was shadow Brexit secretary. He used it to try and get legal advice on Theresa May's Irish backstop plan, requesting information related to the peerage of Lebedev, and also on a so-called no-deal Brexit.
We've raised points of order on a number of occasions about this order. We've asked urgent questions, and I have repeatedly urged the government to reconsider its position, both publicly and privately, making it clear of the consequence of not doing so. But the government has chosen not to do so. I urge the government now, even at this 11th hour, to think again.
It's funny how politics goes full circle sometimes, isn't it, Nick? Here is Kemi Bade, not the Tory leader, explaining what she is doing today.
We need to know what went on with the vetting. So what we're going to do is use a rare parliamentary mechanism called a humble address, which is to force the government to release all of the papers that explain how this vetting, or non-vetting as we believe, took place. What I believe is that the normal procedures were waived away so that the Prime Minister could appoint a man who had such a close association with a convicted paedophile, well known, and he still went ahead and did this. What vetting was done? Let's see all of the correspondence, emails, mobile phone records. We want to see everything.
Now, a humble address, Nick, if it's agreed, voted on, it's meant to be binding on the House of Commons, meaning they would have to release those papers. And, Nick, I'm told this morning Number 10 are prepared to do that. I see on the order paper the government's put down an amendment saying they will support this move, but not if it involves any information that would prejudice national security or international relations. So I think, Nick, we could be gearing up for an almighty row today about what exactly this means. There are huge questions about what Keir Starmer knew about those links when he appointed him, why he appointed him in the first place. Is there a smoking gun in some of these documents? We may know by the end of the day, Nick. It's going to be a hugely risky moment for the Prime Minister and for this Labour government.
Stay calm. You'll get through it. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, reporting. So when have we witnessed this before? Sex, scandals, sacking, and even...
From Russia with love, I fly to you.
Even the allegations of spying, the so-called Perfumo affair, which
I only know about because I'm a journalist and I've written it sometimes, so it's a good idea to have a rough idea of what you're talking about. So for younger people, what was it and what did it do to the then government? We return again to Dr. Craig Prescott. Good to have you on again, Craig. Constitutional expert, lecturer at the Royal Holloway University of London, who joined us yesterday. If I can find an excuse, he'll join me again tomorrow because I thoroughly enjoyed my conversation with him. If you would, Craig, take the listeners back, the Profumo Affair. What did it, when did it start? What did it comprise?
Okay, so in 1961, there was a party at Cliveden, the home of Viscount Astor, and Christine Keeler, who is perhaps famous for a photograph where she doesn't wear many clothes, but but she's behind a chair.
Yeah, I don't think you and I will reprise that photograph in some way. That's all right with you, Craig.
So she was there, but also the Secretary of State for War, John Profumo, was there at this party, and they met. They had an affair in the months following up from that. But it also turned out that there were rumours that Christine Keeler was also seeing Yevgeny Ivanov, a Soviet naval attaché. And the authorities were interested in him because there was a chance that he might defect. But clearly you had a link here between Profumo, who was Secretary of State for War, and effectively a Soviet spy.
Yep.
And then Profumo denied all knowledge of his, all knowledge of Christine Keeler and didn't have an affair, denied that in a statement in the House of Commons. Police investigations found that that was untrue. And so Profumo had done the one thing that you should never do, which is mislead the House of Commons. And so he immediately resigned. There's a little bit more complexity in that. There was a chiropractor involved called Stephen Ward and, yes, and other people. But
famous sociolite and osteopath, as I recall, or chiropractor, exactly right. What did it do for the government of Harold Macmillan?
Ultimately, it was a nail in the coffin of his government, that that perhaps slightly patrician style of government and was sort of running out of steam as the 60s were getting going. And, you know, the era of deference was disappearing. This was another nail in that coffin. Private Eye was sort of very, very strong, you know, attacking Macmillan, you know, showing him as an old man. And ultimately, this was just the idea that the Conservative government of the day had fallen out of tune with the times, and it was time for a change.
No two scandals are ever the same, and indeed we have sexual goings-on here involving a model and Cliveden and everything else, but do you see any similarities, Craig?
I think I see the similarity in that it's always the denial that is the thing that people get caught over. That you know, with Profumo, it was his denial in the House of Commons that ultimately was the thing that he resigned over. And similarly here with Peter Mandelson, you see that, you know, he's had all these denials, and then we've had documentary evidence that, you know, those denials may not well be the whole truth. And it's the denial that's the straw that breaks the camel's back that leads them to ultimately to resign or whatever the consequences are.
Craig, thanks as ever. Probably won't talk tomorrow, but I'm sure we'll talk soon. Dr. Craig Prescott, constitutional expert, lecturer at the Royal Holloway University of London. As I said yesterday, students jolly lucky to have him in front of them, I would suggest. Right, calls already coming in. Oh, that's interesting. Sue Profumo was your local MP. Gosh. I want to hear what you have to say about that. And then in other news, it's a romantic moment, or it's an intimate moment, or it's a friend you haven't seen for ages. You go to an upmarket restaurant, you scan it, wow, this is not going to be cheap. The starters are coming in at nearly 30 quid. But at least we're in lovely surroundings. And that is the reality of this particular restaurant in Kent, according to Jan Leeming, who says, if you can afford to eat here, you can afford a babysitter. Is she right? That's after the 9:16 LBC News, read by Dominic Ellis.
The government says it will release some documents related to its decision to appoint Peter Mandelson as the UK's ambassador to the US. It's understood Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has now moved out of his Royal Lodge mansion in Windsor. And people are being told not to travel on Southern, Thames Link and Gatwick Express services due to multiple incidents causing major disruption. LBC weather cloudy for most with bright spells in southern areas after a foggy morning. Rain confined to northern Scotland. A high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M11 remains closed southbound between Junction 7 at Harlow and the M25 junction. It's following this serious accident where a car overturned. The investigation works are still taking place. Long delays on the A1M southbound to Junction 8 at the A602 where a car's broken down. Traffic was being held on the M40 northbound at the M25 junction. It's all been released. All the lanes are back open, but it's still slow back onto the A40 from Hillingdon. Also delays on the M3 northbound up to Junction 4 at Camberley. There are so many problems on the tubes and the trains at Thameslink, Cartwright between Hitchin and Cambridge. In fact, the entire Thameslink, Southern and Gatwick Express networks are severely disrupted, and the Central Line Cartwright between White City and Ealing Broadway.
Call the Cabinet on LBC. Put your questions to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting. Today from 1 with Sheila Fogarty.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Everything dinner at Ocado. Save on sausages, tinned tomatoes and get a great price on garlic. Then splurge on the fancy pasta. The kind you know you're pronouncing wrong, which means it must be good. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Select lines only, geographical restrictions, minimum spend and charges apply. Offers end 24th of Feb. Terms and offer info at ocado.com/terms.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10k, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Sue, coming to you in just a moment. Ashley in Beaconsfield. The scandal involving Peter Mandelson is the tip of the iceberg. It dwarfs the Profumo affair and that of any misdemeanors during COVID. The Prime Minister needs to resign. Had he done his due diligence, he would have established this was not the right move to appoint Mandelson back into government. It does seem incredible, doesn't it? The so-called director, well, not the so-called, he was the director of public prosecutions, but let's move to other matters, your calls on this, other matters to come. Sue in the New Forest. Now, tell me about Profumo. Good morning.
Hello, good morning, Nick. I loved your show. I followed you since the Big Boys Breakfast
good
days.
Good Lord.
I know. I'm now too lazy now.
Wow. Unfortunately, David's no longer with us. He's gone to the great newsroom in the sky, the other fellow. But
yeah.
There we are.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was lovely,
yes, I was born in Warwickshire, actually, in Eddington Spa. Yes. And I grew up in a little village called Morton Mole. And those days, it was still what we would call quite a feudal system.
Okay.
We still had lords and ladies and people in the manor and, you know, people in service working right. for them. And it was all accepted, and that was the higher classes, et cetera, et cetera. Now, John Profumo was our MP, and right. as you say, I was only a teenager then, but my father knew him and his wife, Valerie. She was an actress, actually, Valerie Hobson, and knew them quite well. And my father did things for the British Legion, and they used to have whisk drives and what have you. And he used to come to the village, and I used to see him quite often.
What sort of years are we talking about, roughly, Sue?
Early 60s.
And he was popular?
Right. He was popular, and as I say, those days are very, very different to what they are today. Of course, he had no social media, you know, so
no,
everything
course.
Was done with newspapers and the radio, mostly. But the thing is, he resigned, but as you know,
yes, he did.
He left Parliament. But the thing is with him, he then went into obscurity. We didn't hear about him again, but he started to work with the homeless. He started to do things like washing up in places, community centres, what have you. He worked quietly. He served people, and we didn't hear about him again. Now, that is very different to what we're facing today, because this Mandelson fellow, he's what we would have called a snob, because he loves to be with the people with the money, he loves to have the acclaim, he loves to have the titles.
Yeah.
Now, there's no way I could ever see a person like him going off into obscurity, working with the homeless, etc., etc.
No.
Because it's such a different world today. And then the other thing I just wanted to say to you is that I think it was 63 that they had the election. And on that day, I went over to Stratford with my friend.
Yes.
And we were, I won't say where we were, but we were somewhere, and Screaming Lord Sutch came by because he was standing there. His first election. And he saw us there. He said, "Hello, girls, how are you?" And we said, "Well, we're actually doing something for the Liberal Party, and we're doing an exit poll." And when we finished that, he says, "Come on, let's all go for a walk together around this town." So arm in arm, we all went round Stratford on Avon with Screaming Lord Sutch. And you can imagine teenage girls. That whole day and the whole perfume affair became a big thing in our heads as we grew older.
Did his wife stay with him, lastly?
He was a great bloke.
Yeah. Did his wife stay with him through it all? Do you know?
I'm not sure. No. In those days, people didn't wash their dirty laundry. No. And so it would have been dreadful for them all.
She did. She stayed with him until her death in 1998. She stayed with him. Declining to ever speak publicly about the affair. Well, I don't blame her for that.
No. I went to school at a place called Kyneton High School, which is further towards, just outside, well, actually, it's where the Battle of Edge Hill was, just up the way. And it used to be that people used to come in and say, "Oh, they've got Keeler's knickers hanging up in the barn at so-and-so pub," and all this kind of thing. It was all a bit of a jape.
I've lost a little bit of cleaners, isn't it? But what a great story. Sue, thank you for the early days of John Profumo. My goodness, we were going a little bit back in time. We will have more calls on that. Simon, you'll be the next caller. But I want to take you to a real swanky upmarket restaurant. You're there with your wife or your husband or your partner. Darling, isn't it wonderful? We don't have enough of these nights, and I'm now remembering why I fell in love with you when I got online and found you on that special service, and we had our first date, and here we are together at last, recapturing the magic. So I want to say to you, God's sake! You're trying to put your marriage back on track. You're trying to woo the man or woman you love, and that happens? Well, apparently it did at the Pig at Bridge Place near Canterbury in Kent. And Jan Leeming, the former newsreader, who's 84, and the Daily Mail says, who came sixth in I'm a Celebrity in 200s. If ever I achieve anything like, please God, don't say who once finished ninth in something. I mean, it's just awful. Anyway, she's at the restaurant. I've got the menu. Here we go. I mean, this, you're going to expect something quite nice. But a plate of scallops for a start is going to set you back 18 quid. Roasted, what the hell is this? Boltardi beetroot is going to cost you 14 quid. This South East Coast fish platter for two, 80 quid. A Tamworth pork chop, 30 quid. Dear God, purple sprouting broccoli, potato gnocchi and black garlic, that's 21 quid. So you want it to be nice, but should children be barred from restaurants like that? Well, Martin Bridge is owner of the Whippet Inn, a boutique, child-free restaurant, parent-friendly, adult-friendly restaurant in York. Good to have you on, Mr. Bridge. Might look at the prices at Whippet Inn in a moment, but what is your policy towards children, Martin? Good morning.
My price is probably not far off the same as the Pig, to be fair.
Okay.
Policy of children, we opened 12 years ago, and on the back of advice from my sort of friends and family, they were like, "Can you just create somewhere a safe haven for parents, guardians and stuff, and just go?"
Was it a difficult decision, Martin, or did it seem to make business sense?
At the time, my son was six,
right,
and we introduced a policy of 14 and above only,
right.
It's a small venue, so it meant that we couldn't really do any sort of segregation. Is probably not the right word, but I'll use it. So we couldn't really create a family area. And I think with the pricing that we were going to go in at, I felt as though that the whole experience needed to sort of fit that price.
Well, the proof of your pudding and your main courses and the entree is in the eating. What have people said to you? Do they say, oh, Martin, I love this place so much. I come with my husband. I come with my wife. It's so relaxing. Or do they say, oh, come on, I want to bring the kids. What's the reality?
We get a bit of both, but we manage it through our booking system. We have a huge returning sort of clientele who love it for the fact that it is adult only. We've won awards for it. For being best date night. But at the same time, we have been on the end of rather a sort of sharp tone.
Yeah, you would have done. But listen, you're able to do it. You can invite the people you want. And what happens? So if I seek to book into the Whippet Inn, is it on your website that I have to be 14 or above? How do you actually put it into practice?
It's on the website, our social media, our booking policy. When you get the confirmation emails,
right?
When we ring to confirm the booking, we also make a reference to that it is 14 and above.
Let's put
so
to you.
So we really do make it quite as apparent as possible.
Let's put to you the comments that Jan Leeming made. This was a restaurant down in Canterbury. I better see what the restaurant has to say. I'll read their comment in a moment. But anyway, she says, if you can afford to eat here, you can afford a babysitter after children were not just being very, very noisy. They're actually sort of playing in the restaurant as well, which is obviously rather going to spoil things for an adult couple.
Yeah, I mean, kids are kids, though, so they are going to do what they want to do, if parents do need to take a responsibility on looking after their own children. I think it's difficult to manage that situation once it's in the building. I think it's difficult, for the staff to get involved, certainly if it's young staff. I think it's, but at the same time, I do think restaurants should have some sort of responsibility. Dining out isn't cheap anymore,
no.
And I think there needs to be some mutual respect in relation to sort of, what everybody wants from when they go out, If it's a family restaurant, it promotes itself as a family restaurant. I think you need to accept the fact that it's going to be louder than,
yeah,
than normal.
Okay. What's the special today at the Whippet Inn in York?
We've got a 100-day aged whiskey-wrapped prime rib on at the moment.
Oh, man alive. How much is that going to set me back?
£180 for two.
But I'm on my way. The producer loves a bit of steak, and she's also partial to whiskey. We'll get that train. The Whippet Inn. Martin, good luck. Martin Bridge is the owner of the Whippet Inn, a boutique, child-free restaurant in York. This is what Jan Leeming said. I don't think a traditional pub is the place for children. In the evening, surely young children should be in bed. Cost of babysitting should be factored into the cost of the outing. The child screaming was far from pleasant. I do not think babies should be taken into restaurants. And what surprised me was how the staff accepted it. And I didn't like the attitude. Who's right? Who's wrong? On Jan Leeming, we'll take your views on that news. Simon, I'll talk to you about Lord Mandelson as well. And coming up, if you have a child who has SEND, autism, the high number of pupils who've missed 2 weeks of school this school year, i.e. since September. We'll have more on that. It's 9:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news with Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, a cabinet minister has rejected suggestions that controversy surrounding Peter Mandelson could bring down the government. He's being criminally investigated over allegations he leaked sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein back in 2009. It's understood Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has now moved out of his Royal Lodge mansion in Windsor. Buckingham Palace announced in October that he'd been told to leave over the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. And people are being told not to travel on Southern, Thames Link and Gatwick Express services this morning. The operator Govia has blamed multiple incidents, including a derailment and a signalling fault. LBC weather, cloudy for most with bright spells in southern areas after a foggy morning. Rain confined to the north of Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
Call the Cabinet on LBC. Put your questions to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting. Today from 1 with Sheila Fogarty.
You subscribe to music, TV, your gym, maybe even your weekly flowers. So why not your car? A Pivotal car subscription comes with serious horsepower. One simple monthly payment puts you behind the wheel of a Range Rover or Defender, with everything from insurance to servicing taken care of. No long-term commitments, no complications. Experience exceptional driving without the hassle of ownership or leasing with Pivotal car subscription. Subscribe to smarter driving. Find out more at drivepivotal.com/radio.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
You're listening to LBC 9:33 news breaking at this time. Sad news that the legendary snooker commentator John Virgo has sadly died. He was aged 79. He became known as the voice of the sport, making his final appearance on the BBC for last month's Masters. He won the UK Championship in 1979. He died on Wednesday, yesterday, in Spain, where he lived. And my condolences to Rosie, his now widow, who I have known for 40 years. Longer. Who I've known for more than 40 years, so I'm sure she's not listening, but many people will be listening to know both Rosie, who's a fantastic presence in the world of journalism. So massive condolences to you, Rosie, for the death of your husband, John Virgo. I can't believe it was only last summer that we were sitting in someone's front garden celebrating a wedding. My goodness me, and I was chatting away with John, so there we are. John Virgo, 79. Let's move on to other matters, although we move on by, in a sense, going backwards, because I just want to read a couple of emails, and then I will come to your calls. Actually, Simon, you have been hanging on. I'm going to take your call now. I just want to read this email from Anne. I'm so sorry, text from Anne in St. Albans. The Profumo Affair. I was there. Rice Davis, Keeler, all used to drink at a local pub near to where Stephen Ward's sister, he was the socialite who was involved, lived. I rode ponies for her. Anne, how interesting. Her brother, sadly, you say committed suicide. We say took his life now. The press had a field day, as there was no mainstream media then. Different days, but same scandal. At least no deaths are involved with Mandelson. Well, they're not involved with Mandelson. I'll say again, for the record, they are not involved with Mandelson. But with the broader Epstein affair, let's not forget that Virginia Giuffre, who was allegedly one of the victims, took her life, of course, not involved with Mandelson. I stress that for the third time, but there are similarities in a sense. Simon's in Basingstoke. Simon, the point you want to make, and thank you for hanging on the line.
Yes, Nick. I mean, I think that we can look at other examples of where politicians have behaved better. Look at Lord Carrington, who was Foreign Secretary during the Falklands War.
He completely missed the boat and he decided to quit.
Well, To be fair, if you're going to blame anyone for the Argentine invasion, I think it was John Knott's defence cuts that exposed us to that risk. But Lord Carrington felt that someone senior in the government had to go.
Yep.
And it would not be wise when you're literally mounting an expeditionary campaign to get rid of the defence secretary. But then also think of Estelle Morris, who is education secretary, who resigned because she felt she wasn't up to the job. And because she promised David Willetts that if she didn't hit a certain target, she would go. And she went. So she made a promise and she kept it. Lord Carrington put country before his own career. And we just don't have people like that in government anymore.
Jonathan Aitken. Do you remember he went down for perjury? He taught people how to read and write in prison, and he's now a priest.
Exactly. The quality of people. And as you say, Perfumo spent the rest of his life making up for the mistakes that he'd made.
Working at Toynbee Hall, the charity there. Yeah, absolutely.
So the issue is, can you have a democracy, like we supposedly have, when there is virtually no trust in politicians of any stripe?
Well, I want to ask you that. That was going to be my final question, because we played at the start of the show, and there's no reason on earth that you would have been listening nearly 3 hours ago, the clip from Sir Keir Starmer on the steps of Number 10 after the successful election, in which he says, we will bring trust back into politics. How would you rate that that assertion or that promise now? Can he...
I cannot think of... In my lifetime, we've had no politician who is more hated than Starmer, which, to be frank, is a little unfair.
No, I think Boris was more hated.
Conservative government has... Prior Conservative government was awful, just not quite as bad as the current Labour government.
Do you honestly think... that's interesting. Do you honestly think that Sir Keir is more hated than Liz Truss or Boris Johnson?
Yes, I've yet to meet anyone who says a positive thing about him.
Okay, that's really interesting. We might pursue that. Simon, be well. Thank you for that. I'm moving on. We will come back to Mandy, because I want to talk about this row involving Jan Leeming. I'd better tell you what the restaurant says. Jan Leeming complaining, a very upmarket restaurant, the Pig at Bridge Place near Canterbury in Kent, and children misbehaved and the staff didn't do enough. The Pig says, everyone is welcome at the Pig at Bridge Place. We go to great lengths to ensure all our guests, young and old, are looked after by our wonderful team. Stuart's in Chepstow. What's the story you're going to tell me, Stuart? Good morning.
Yeah, Nick, hi.
Hello, sir.
I took my wife to a very upmarket restaurant last weekend. Is it okay if I mention
them? Yeah, are you going to say disparaging comments about them?
Not about them, but we had a great experience.
Good.
Apart from a screaming child.
Ah, so what did the child do? I know scream, but I mean, was he, she upset by something? What kicked it off?
No, I mean, I think the child was probably about 18 months or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And in my view, the child shouldn't have been brought into the restaurant in the first place.
Months, yeah.
I mean, I'm sufficiently old that I can recall that I couldn't go into a pub until I was 18, although I did go
sure
to one when I was about 16, something like that, but still.
For the Royal in Eltham. It's closed down.
And then I've got to the stage now where I don't have to pay school fees and university, so if I've got a pound, if I've got a pound in my pocket, it's now my pound.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I can finally afford to go to upmarket restaurants. And it spoilt it for us both.
Did it? Did you mention it to the staff?
No, because I'm a believer that you don't make a bad thing worse.
Okay.
And what I was saying to my wife is, firstly, you know, when our son was young, if we went to a nice restaurant, we wouldn't take him with us.
Yeah.
And then when we would go to more of a bistro thing, what we would do is we'd get there at, say, 6 o'clock. We wouldn't have a starter. We wouldn't have a dessert. We'd just have the main course and then go.
Yes. Books.
And another thing I've got, just if I can do a real gripe list at present.
Briefly,
you go
if you
to
would.
So many pubs now,
and
you've got blinking dogs there. I don't want to eat with a dog.
Oh, I do. I love seeing dogs in a pub. I think that's what you want, isn't it? No, I love a dog in a pub. Books and crayons, that's always good for little hands as well. That entertains them and can keep them going. Stuart, I'm glad you had a good meal, and I'm sorry it was disrupted in a sense. We'll come back to more calls on that and on Peter Mandelson, or is it Lord? After this story I've mentioned already, this is a troubling figure. 1 in 3 autistic young people have missed at least 2 weeks of school since the start of term. That's, of course, the school term in September. This poll was done by the charity Ambitious About Autism with those findings. And this comes as the government is expected to publish its plans to reform the Special Educational Needs and Disabilities, now known as SEND, the system in the forthcoming weeks. Let's speak again with Gaz Hitchin, co-presenter of the Autism Dadcast. He has a 6-year-old chap with it, and he joins me now. How's the education going of the little fella? Morning.
The education of my little fella's going fantastically well. He's in a specialist setting, so it's going very well.
What about others? What about these reforms that eventually we're going to hear from the government, Gaz?
Yeah, yeah, it's everybody's talking about it and we don't know what's coming. A lot of parents are very concerned, very worried about what might be around the corner, specifically whether there's going to be a right to appeal if their children don't get what they need. That's probably the thing that's worrying parents the most.
Delighted to hear about your lad. What do you suppose is going wrong in this high number of other cases, though? We've got the wrong children, or sorry, we've got the wrong schools for these children.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's not surprising to any of us. We hear from a lot of parents that are kind of desperately trying to get their kids into school. The parents are really trying. And on the most part, these kids want to be in school. It's just the mainstream school environment isn't built for children with autism. So I think there's still a lot that needs to be done to, especially with this white paper looming, there's a lot that needs to be done around, you know, teacher training, for example, and early recognition and diagnosis of some of these kids.
What's the expression I use for the school your child attends? Because you're saying mainstream school. I don't want to say, do I call them special schools? What are they called, Gaz?
Generally, they're called specialist schools.
Specialist schools, okay.
Specialist, I'm not easily offended as far as that's concerned. Some people would be, but...
I have to be aware of other listeners who aren't quite as robust as clearly you are, Gaz, that you put yourself out there as an Autism Dadcast. Let's talk about your podcast, Autism Dadcast. How often is the fact that kiddies can't get into school, how often is that something you regularly discuss?
We discuss it maybe every other, a lot of the time.
Really?
We a lot of what we talk about is kind of in response to a lot of the messages we get from parents. And it's a strange situation to be in. Andy and myself, we've both got children, similar age, and they're both the profundity of autism. They're both in a specialist setting, but we're in a strange situation when the more profound your child is, the less they struggle because they're in the right setting. A lot of these kids, we call them the send between us. Because they're kind of in a grey zone where a specialist setting isn't quite right, but current mainstream settings aren't right for them either. And they really struggle and the parents really have a hard time.
You can't build specialist schools overnight. What are you hoping for from the government?
You can't build them overnight, for sure. I think the next step, I think, for the government, there needs to be the legal right to appeal. 100% that needs to remain, and that is so important. But as far as stuff that they can do within the schools themselves, I think mainstream, teachers need more training. They need to be flexible. These kids are all very different, so we need to be able to be flexible with these kids before anything turns into a crisis. And I think earlier support is important.
Always good speaking to you, Gaz Hitchin. Thank you, co-presenter of the Autism Dadcast. Calls already coming in on that. Phil, I'll take your call. Let's do it the other side of the news, because we're going to news in just over 30 seconds. Just feature some of the social media that's coming in on the Jan Leeming row. Ben says, if you're the sort of person who'd pay £12 for a bit of beetroot, you deserve to have your grandeur bubble burst. Phil in Fareham, I'm with Jan Leeming 100%. We'd never allow our child to misbehave in a restaurant or a cafe. Now it's a case of us avoiding family-friendly pubs to avoid the madness of screaming kids running around the tables while their parents stare at their mobile phone screens. Catherine Licciardi says, we own a country pub in Bedfordshire, which my husband and brother have transformed into one of the most popular restaurants in our area. They manage to cater family and couples meals to booze brunches in a tasteful way. It's all about managing the space and having staff who can be tactful with all the customers to be aware of the experience for all of them. We might come back to that. We're definitely going to be talking about the problem with autism for children and education after the 9:45 LBC News headlines, read by Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to LBC, a cabinet minister has pushed back on claims that controversy surrounding Peter Mandelson could bring down the government. Passengers are being told not to travel on Southern Thames Link and Gatwick Express rail services this morning due to multiple incidents causing major disruption. And the government's made a new promise that 3/4 of cancer patients will survive from 2035. LBC weather, cloudy for most with bright spells in southern areas after a foggy morning, rain confined to northern Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. In Essex, the M11 remains closed southbound between Junction 7 at Harlow and the M25. It's following the accident where a car overturned around 1 o'clock this morning, and there are lengthy delays back past Junction 7A at Harlow, and all the surrounding routes are hardly moving at all. Very busy on the M23 southbound at Junction 9 at Gatwick Airport. A car's broken down. The A13 at the Stamford La Hope bypass remains closed eastbound at the Five Bells interchange, and that's causing lengthy delays on the approach.
Cambridge. On the trains, Thames Link services aren't running their services all the way from Cambridge to Brighton, and that's because of the various signal failures throughout this morning, and southern services are also disrupted.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Is Keir Starmer up to his ankles, up to his knees, up to his ears, or possibly already underwater with the Peter Mandelson scandal? So, hey, PMQ should be good, no?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10k, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is, and London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, get 3 months free. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 19th of February. Pay bi-monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the journalism industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Molly, a journalism student in Year 12.
Outside of the classroom, we run our own news platform called The Loop. I do a daily news bulletin and produce videos for socials. We learn everything we need to be a journalist and have even learned alongside the news team at Global.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Idle money chills in your current account. Parked in front of the telly, wanting a snack, yet too lazy to move. But thanks to Monzo, busy money got up early, automatically split your paycheck into pots, rounded up your purchases into savings, invested your interest into ISAs. Oh, and has already written itself a to-do list for tomorrow. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving. UK residents aged 18 plus, Monzo personal account required, capital at risk, T's and C's and fees may apply.
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious, at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
This is such an issue, these children in school. Phil, I'll be with you in just a moment. I just want to check I can read your names. Yeah, Luke in Cornwall, my 10-year-old boy has ADHD and Tourette's. He's in a mainstream school, but we've battled for years against a woefully incompetent, undertrained and understaffed SEND department. Speaking to parents in similar situations at different schools, it seems to be a widespread issue. Your last caller was correct about the grey area, children that do not get the support they need and deserve. This comes in again. Can I read this? Yes, I can. Dean in North Warwickshire. Our younger son is autistic. He's in year 11. Has had no end of issues with his previous school, from teacher bullying to general ignorance to not following his care plan. They tried their very best to permanently exclude, but couldn't, as that would have broken the law. Our son has started out of his new school, oh, this is good, fabulously. They're meeting need and communicating with him, and us as parents. Couldn't be more different. The issue is with teaching staff at some mainstream schools. Phil, excuse me. Sorry, Phil. Phil and Dudley wants to talk to this. Phil, you're on the radio. Good morning. What are you going to tell me?
Good morning, Nick. First time caller. Absolutely love the show. I've been listening for years.
Thanks, sir. Thanks for your support.
Bless you. What I will just quickly say, I've actually got my autistic child. He's a foster child with me, so you may actually pick him up now and again to apologise.
Well, if you have to go, just put the phone down. He comes first. Obviously, priorities are with him.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you saying so.
Go ahead.
But, yeah, so the main reason for my call is, and it's kind of frustrating, but it's just sad for him ultimately. He's been in care with me since October of last year. Lovely little sweet boy.
Right.
But we're now into February and he's still not in school.
Right.
So I know from a law perspective, that's longer than he should be. And the truth is, we're still no closer to finding a school for him now. It doesn't help the fact that he's coming to me into care from in a different borough to the one he was in previously.
Mm.
So then you've got a bit of a communication thing between who's going to do what and when.
Yep.
And often, as a foster parent, you're just sitting back and listening and have even less control over it. It's just frustrating. It must be awful for many families.
But you operate as his parent, right?
That's right.
The same level of parental authority, for want of a better expression, as
absolutely.
Would... I see. Do you sense the local authorities don't listen to you, then, as you're a foster parent, Phil?
No, I wouldn't... It really is not that. I think it's just the sheer numbers and pressure of the whole system often is the case, if I'm honest. My experience is it's people say and support you as best as they can.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's our first experience of having an autistic child.
It was your first experience, did you say?
Yeah, of an autistic child, yeah. So I've got three birth children who are all grown up now.
Yeah.
And I've got other children and they're also in care, but it's our first experience.
How old is the little chap?
He's 5 years of age. He's such a sweet little lad. And, you know, he really demands a lot of your time. So I'm at 47 now, so it's quite exhausting. So there is a case of...
I absolutely admire you. Can I just ask you... There's a story about foster care. There's a shortage, 10,000 extra places, and the government is suggesting that rule changes that would allow single people, renters, and those in full-time work to become foster carers to try and create those 10,000 foster care places. Phil, what do you and your wife or your partner, what do you get from it?
Oh, my word. Well, can I just encourage everybody? I just heard something, I think, because I flicked between your station and the LBC Plus One.
Oh, yes.
And I heard them saying about it. Well, absolutely, everybody should. Don't rule themselves out to start with. Don't think your circumstances would rule you out. There's lots of reasons, like same-sex couples, they'll look at every avenue.
Yeah.
But we get so much out of it. We've been doing it for 7 years now. Not only do we get so much out of it, our birth daughters also, and they're really involved with the care. And they then start even appreciating us a little bit more, thinking what we've done. So,
what have you learned about yourself, lastly, as a foster dad?
Yeah, you know...
I mean, I couldn't do it. I don't have the patience. I just don't have the patience, I'm afraid. You must be an extremely patient man.
Yeah, you do. And it is pushed to the limit at times. There's no two ways about it, because the frustration of times and having that... Sometimes even having your own time with your birth children, you're living with all some... Sometimes the guilt of, am I spreading myself too thin? That's the truth of it. However, we've done such a good job with our daughters that they know... that we're doing it for the greater good, so to speak. And so ultimately, it is only... there are frustrating things, Nick. There really are, because it's the world we live in. However, overall, I would say the benefits simply outweigh by a long stretch. And me and my wife, we have our moments, but we've only grown stronger because it's something we can do together.
Isn't that wonderful? Phil, I'll let you get back to the little man. Thanks for all your input on both subjects. Have yourself a good day. Come back to politics, and it's not surprising. It is dominating the Jews' agenda, not for one moment, notwithstanding the importance of children with these needs. But you've got the government, certainly a nervous government, going into this afternoon's parliamentary affairs, the possibility of a humble address, something that Sir Keir Starmer was very keen to support when he was in opposition. I wonder what his position will be now he's in power. James is in High Wycombe. James, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. As a state school lad, I kind of look upon this, and for some reason I'm thinking about Angela Rayner.
Right, yes.
Yeah, you know, let's look at this CV. It's Westminster School, Oxford University.
We're talking about Peter Mandelson. We're talking about Peter Mandelson now, not Angela Rayner.
Exactly, yeah, or are we talking about a Tory? When I read through it, Westminster School, Oxford PPE, father was a civil servant, grandfather was a Home Secretary.
Yes.
You know, like, it sounds like a Tory. And the reality is, people look at the Tories and think that they're the bad guys, but Labour and Conservatives are both dominated as parties by a tranche of people who are inside a network, Nick. And that network raises them money, it helps them campaign, it gets them power. And Mandelson personifies that. He's the end bracket in the Blairism birth, which ate Toryism, right? It used the same people in the same universities, the same networks. And Starmer has utilised Mandelson, knowing full well what he brings to the table. No one who's ever followed politics would not know what this man was. I mean, his nickname was the Dark Lord, wasn't it? I mean, when you put that in, you know
Prince
what you're
getting. Prince of Darkness was in it. All I would say is, James, I will come back to you. He was supremely successful. He was one of the key architects of New Labour. Sadly, he seems to have absolutely no radar antennae in his personal life, but phenomenal in his professional life. And if you're sitting there as the Prime Minister, where I would vary from Sir Keir is I would say, right, I know Peter's background. I want this checked 3 times over to the nth degree. And that's where I think it went wrong with Keir Starmer.
I think they did a deal with the devil and they knew it. And the reason he was successful, Nick, is because in politics you can either play with integrity or you can play with the dark arts. There's a reason that Mandelson was of value. It's because he was inside networks and knew people and had access and leverage. Let's be careful about that. You know, leverage. And if we look at everything that's going wrong with this country now that has spawned the polarity in politics we're seeing, it has been driven by what New Labour put in place. And people could write PhDs on it. And Mandelson was a critical component of the trio responsible for that. For Starmer to put his hands in the air and say, but I thought he was a good bloke. He knew exactly what he is. And let's be honest, a man who's cancelling jury trials, cancelling elections, you know, giving away islands and renting them back, doesn't seem to me like a person who's really working in the honesty camp either. So
I will leave it there, James. Thank you. Devastating critique from you, but I want to leave the final minute. Thanks, James. Chandra in Newcastle. Chandra, he said he'd rebuild trust. How's he getting, the Prime Minister, how's he getting on with that?
He's not getting on very well. If, as the previous caller said, anyone who has known Peter Mandelson over the last how many ever years would keep him away from at miles distance from Westminster. For him to bring back Peter Mandelson to such a senior post seriously questions Keir Starmer's judgment. The point is, we will never know the extent of compromise Peter Mandelson has caused to the national security. The extent of secure information that has been passed on, we might never know.
Well, that might depend on the so-called humble address, which is going to be put forward by the opposition later today. So don't touch that dial. Stay tuned. I'm sure we'll have it all on LBC. Chandra, you had the last voice. I'm done for another day. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it for me for today. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and not for the first time in recent years, I find myself fondly thinking, well, perhaps not fondly, of that classic news bulletin from the 1930s when the tuxedo-clad or the bow-tie-clad newsreader announced that there wasn't any news, so they played some music instead. No danger of that happening anytime soon, or quite possibly ever. And I don't like asking you how big a story is, because I think, without sounding too arrogant, it's our job to tell you that. But I'm seeing an extraordinary diversity of opinion on this, from people who, I think, quite persuasively think that what is happening with Peter Mandelson is up there with John Profumo, and then some people wondering whether we're being distracted from other issues.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the government says it'll release documents related to its decision to appoint Peter Mandelson as the UK's ambassador to the US. The Conservatives are pushing for more details over his vetting process. He's now under criminal investigation over allegations that he leaked sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein back in 2009. Speaking to LBC, the Cabinet Minister Wes Streeting rejected suggestions the saga will bring down the government.
People up and down the country have been horrified by what they see. Mm. And that sense of betrayal is felt deeply in the Labour Party, because we also feel it is a betrayal of our values. And people who knew Peter Mandelson, and I put that deliberately in past tense, are shocked by this. People who knew Peter Mandelson really didn't know him at all, because no one would have expected this kind of action or behaviour from him.
LBC has contacted Peter Mandelson for comment. He's previously denied any wrongdoing.
Andrew Mountbatten Windsor is understood to have moved from his Windsor mansion to the Sandringham estate. The relocation was announced by Buckingham Palace in October following pressure over his ties with Jeffrey Epstein. Andrew denies any wrongdoing in connection with Epstein. Britain's biggest railway franchise has issued a do-not-travel alert. There's been major disruption to Southern, Thameslink and Gatwick Express services this morning. Govia has blamed multiple incidents, including a train derailment and a signalling fault. 75% of cancer patients in England will survive the disease by 2035 under a new government promise. That's up from the current rate of 60%, which is below many other European countries. It's a key part of a new national cancer plan. Professor Peter Johnson is the National Clinical Director for Cancer at NHS England.
We need to keep focusing heavily on diagnosing cancer as early as possible because we know that's what makes the biggest difference. If we can catch cancer at an early stage, then that improves the chances of surviving it more than anything else.
The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, will be taking your calls with Sheila Fogarty here on LBC later today. And the former snooker player and broadcaster John Virgo has died at the age of 79. He won four professional titles, including the UK Championship in 1979 as part of an 18-year career. Virgo was also well known as a commentator and for his role on the 1990s TV snooker game show Big Break. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 were trading up 56 at 10,370. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most with bright spells in southern areas after a foggy morning. Rain will be confined to northern Scotland by the afternoon, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The Volkswagen Fantabulous, Fandabby-dozy, Fandang-a-ding-dong fortnight is here.
Stop. We've been through this, Harry. It's the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight. Much snappier.
Oh, OK. From the 2nd to the 16th of February, the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight gives you an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit on top of existing offers on the Polo, Golf, Tiguan and our all-electric ID 3, 4 and 5 with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer now. Hurry, offer ends 16th of February. Better?
Perfect.
Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 4 minutes after ten, and now, inevitably and quite correctly, it is to the Metropolitan Police that the curious case of Peter Mandelson, not Meter Pandelson, goes next. Leaked Downing Street emails and market-sensitive information being sent, it would appear, to the child sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Can I confide in you briefly? This story is objectively huge. It is, in many ways, unprecedented. Not in quite the same way as previous parliamentary scandals, about which you will have varying degrees of knowledge. But in terms of what appears to have happened and the absence of anything similar having ever happened before, leaked documents and market-sensitive information might seem like white-collar crimes, but of course in different contexts, you're talking about forms of espionage. And you're talking about somebody who was the de facto deputy prime minister. And for the absolute avoidance of doubt, I think that this is huge and enormously damaging. Enormously. Almost inexpressibly damaging. But you know what I do for a living. I don't think you need to be Sherlock Holmes to work it out, even if you're relatively new to this programme. You know what I do for a living. And I am inappropriately fascinated by the way in which the story is reaching you and the way in which, and I keep a very close eye on switchboards here at LBC Towers, even when I'm not on air, it is not exploding in the way that I expected. I thought yesterday, for example, we'd do 2 hours straight on it without any hesitation, deviation or repetition. And it's not exploding in the way that one might expect. I mean, listen, I don't need to bore you with the details, but I have in front of me a screen, and you can see everybody else's screen when you're in the production office. And quality is not quantity. Quantity is not quality. You know that. I can fill up the phones in 30 seconds flat by asking questions about litter or potholes or immigrants, but and not a single or parking tickets, and not a single caller would have a single interesting thing to say. But there is a sort of relationship, obviously, between scale of response and scale of interest and scale of being interesting. And is it an inappropriate fascination? I'm just confiding in you. No one else is listening. Don't worry. That I'm, and so's Eleanor, the producer. We're both curiously obsessed, along with some other colleagues, about why something so objectively enormous is not exploding all over our screens in the way that we would expect from other stories, from comparable stories. Look, the PPE scandal, goodness knows how many Boris Johnson scandals you're talking about. I wonder whether we got angrier there about the people who were refusing to admit the scale of the problem than we did. It was almost like everyone agrees that this is egregious and disgusting, and no one is defending it. But whereas with Priti Patel and Boris Johnson and Michelle Moan and whatever other scandal you want to pull from the previous 14 years, you'd always have a client journalist or a cabinet minister popping up to defend it. Is it because nobody is defending this? Are we numb now to bad behaviour? I don't know. And I can't open the programme with the question of why you aren't more interested in the thing that we're talking about, because I think you are interested. I've spent increasingly in recent years a degree of time being fascinated by all these weird relationships, the alchemy of what I was going to say what I do for a living, but actually it's the alchemy of what we do together every day, isn't it? There's an alchemy here about sometimes we make magic and sometimes we don't, and nobody really knows why or what the constituent parts are for making magic. Partly, I suppose, you're not going to get a call from someone supremely across the facts or possessed of more understanding and intelligence than the rest of us have. But you might get a story like Margaret, you might get a call like Margaret in Catterick yesterday, who has an experience so profound and so pertinent to what we're talking about that it reaches parts other things can't reach. Nobody's shocked that someone so obviously weird as Peter Mandelson has turned out to be so obviously dodgy, except that he was back in power 2, 3, 4 times after previous scandals. So I may move on to that, and feel free to encourage or discourage me from looking at that question. It's a very odd thing for a phone-in host to do. Why are the switchboards not exploding on a story that is absolutely explosive? Because everyone agrees, maybe? Is it not interesting to... Anyway, I can't do that as the first hour. I may not even do it as the second hour. And then we got PMQs at 12, which you'd think would be riveting, right? You've got Kemi Badenoch, even with her questionable competence, now handed... I mean, it's a bazooka that she's been handed. It's